It's time for Twig This Week at Google. We got the band back together again. Stacey Higginbotham, Jeff Jarvis. There's lots of Google news, new Google products to talk about. You know what? Let's not delay. It's going to be a great show. This Week at Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 377, recorded Wednesday, November 2nd, 2016. Google Throne. This Week in Google is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software. It's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at freshbooks.com/twig. And by Hover. Finding the perfect domain name is incredibly easy with Hover. Go to hover.com and use the promo code TWIG at checkout to save 10% off your first purchase. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest, really not from Google, but everything. The latest everything, because this is kind of our most far-ranging show that talks a lot about society and journalism, social media, of course, Google, Facebook, all of that too. And partly that's because when you have such a great panel of people, always smart, interesting people, you're going to talk about whatever it is that's on our minds, on their minds. Stacey Higginbotham is here. Stacey on IoT. Haven't talked to you, Stacey, since the IoT debacle of 2016. Oh. So we'll talk about that in a moment. But also, let me introduce Mr. Jeff Jarvis, back home after his jaunts around the globe. He's professor of journalism. He's in his office at CUNY.
Yeah.
Also blogs at buzzmachine.com. And has written many, many wonderful books, including What Would Google Do? Public Parts, Geeks Bearing Gifts, about the new reinventing the news business. Hello, you two. I missed you. We got the band back together. I love it.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm excited to be back because it means I'm home.
You've been traveling a lot and you're going to travel again. You're going to San Francisco next week.
I am, but then I'm done.
Really? That's it for the season?
For the season.
CES will be the next thing. So
good. Stacey will be hosting several panels at the Structure Conference in San Francisco this coming week. Election Day. I would like to be at a conference on Election Day and the day after. I would like to be with a large group of people because I think it's fascinating.
David Kirkpatrick has his conference the day after Election Day.
What's his conference?
Techonomy.
Uh-huh. Oh, I'm going to be at that one too.
Oh, then you are traveling.
Where's that?
I think it's in Half Moon Bay.
Oh. So you can go south, but not north? Is that what you're saying?
I'm pretty sure it's somewhere outside of San Francisco. Jeff, don't tell me. Like, I just got something wrong the other day, and I had to switch some flights. So, techonomy.
Not as bad as Paul Theriault actually went to the airport and realized he hadn't booked a flight. He just knew he had to be somewhere and just, I guess, assumed that there'd be a plane for him.
Right, Half Moon Bay.
And and Mark Zuckerberg is going to be at that.
I know. Oh, I haven't talked to Mark Zuckerberg since 2008.
He likes to talk to David.
Yeah.
Very, very, very good. Can't wait. Anyway, I do want to go back in time a couple of weeks because 2 weeks ago, the internet sort of went down, at least got slowed down a lot. Spotify, Twitter, GitHub. Because of an attack, a denial of service attack on Dyn DNS, which is one of the major DNS providers, apparently for those companies. And it turned out the attack was originated from Internet of Things devices, particularly camera and routers made by a Chinese company called Xiangmai, and then sold by a variety of different companies. And
so I'm going to argue with you already.
Yes.
These are not Internet of Things devices. They're devices that happen to be on the internet. Okay, keep going.
That's actually one of the things that came up.
No. Dig down on that. Okay.
That's one of the things that came up was, what is an Internet of Things device?
Okay.
So let me say why this was an issue. These simple, dumb devices are often manufactured in the millions, sold in the millions. IDG estimates 6.5 billion, and this is probably where this definition is critical, IoT devices, and another something like 5.5 million a day going online. These devices typically are made cheaply, sold cheaply, and never updated. Often they have the default password built in to firmware. That was the problem with these Xiaomi devices. So it's easy for a virus like Mirai, the virus that was used in this attack, to just scan the internet, try logging in via Telnet and get in and then put a virus on these devices. In fact, these devices are so simple that the virus sits in RAM. So if you reboot the device, it's clean, but it's then sitting on the internet ready to be hacked one more time. So what happens with this is because there are so many of them, you can compromise a great number of devices, which makes it much easier to do a DDoS attack. These devices sent GRE packets, which were routing packets to DynDNS, packets that could not ignore, nor could it block, because it was coming from so many IP addresses. So first thing is IDG's estimate of IoT devices. I mentioned that on Twit, I think, on Sunday, and everybody said that can't possibly be right. Stacey,
the 6.5 billion?
Yeah.
Well, okay. There's so much to unpack here, and
yes.
I feel like I'm just going to be beaten on a wall. But let's start. All right. These devices. So this is one type of attack. So we're killing all of the Internet of Things based on the devices that are on the internet being used in a DDoS. So we're going to talk only about DDoSes. We're not going to talk about other security issues with IoT. So that's parameter number one. Number two, these devices are routers. They're network DVRs, so they're security cameras. And there are a couple printers in the list. These are devices that connect directly to the internet. They don't, most what I would think of as a modern kind of Internet of Things device that we typically talk about when we think about these things, those connect either through a server, so they've got a different type of architecture, so they don't connect directly out, or they might even connect through a hub. The other thing to know about these is they're Linux servers. These are not like a light bulb. Your light bulb is going to be freaking useless if it were part of a DDoS attack.
It just doesn't have a GRE packet or even a SIM packet. Yeah.
So those are a couple things to keep in mind. I'm not saying this is great. This is really, truly sucky. And I'm kind of glad it happened, because people have been putting stuff online for decades that are not secure. So hard-coded passwords in these routers, dumb. I mean, Mirai just goes through, and the source code for Mirai, you know, basically creates all these bots. That's why when you reboot it in like 10 minutes or so, it's going to get infected again, because you know, you're not even dealing with a person. You're dealing with bots that are like, boop, boop, poke. Are you open? Are you open? Yes, infected. So I don't know. Okay, so that's kind of all of that. And I get really frustrated because we haven't been building things securely for a while.
Right. I mean, you don't have to defend IoT. This isn't an attack on IoT. It's merely an attack on poorly designed IoT.
And it's not even IoT. It's just poorly designed connected crap.
Right.
I mean, these are cheap devices for the most part.
Well, how do you define an Internet of Things device?
Well, up until now, I don't even call things an Internet of Things device, to be totally honest.
You have a podcast called IoT.
Yeah. I do. It's called the Internet of Things. And when I define the Internet of Things,
it's
I define it as...
It's Seinfeld. Don't you get it?
But what are the devices you cover on the IoT podcast? Those are Internet of Things devices, yes?
Most of my devices are smart home stuff,
right,
or sensors in buildings.
So like, you're right. Those devices can't be used in this kind of attack. However, they do still pose security vulnerabilities. For instance, because they are on your network, if they can be compromised, a bad guy can use them to then compromise other devices on your network or hack
your
network.
That is true.
So because they're sitting on the internet in a way that isn't necessarily particularly secure, they offer a vulnerability.
I think the issue is, one, you can't secure anything anymore for the most part. There's this sense of like security is no longer a set it and forget it. It's an ongoing challenge, right? So if you're going to build a product and connect it to the internet, you have to be prepared to conduct pin testing every, however long.
I mean, I would agree with you, but you can cover 99% of the cases with some very simple things that even those things aren't being done. For instance, having firmware that's updatable. All those Xiaomi devices are now being recalled. They're hoping, and of course it will not happen, people will send them back to get the firmware updated. So rule one, like the Ring doorbell, you have to be able to be updated remotely so that if something's discovered, it can be fixed.
That freak people out. That also freaks people out.
It has to happen. It's just like Windows has to be updated. These devices have to be updated. Yes. Acknowledging what you just said, Stacey, nothing's perfect. Two, they can't have hardwired backdoor passwords. That's ridiculous in this day and age.
I would say that's number one.
Okay, maybe even not. Yeah, I mean, that's just so stupid.
Like, hey, don't tape your front key to the door.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is, dude. Okay. But you do the basics. You're going to thwart a lot of this stuff. I mean, there are, of course, lots of edge cases. And we're seeing that now with operating systems from Microsoft and software from big companies, Google and others, that is really well-written software. The latest attack on Android, DRAMer, is a highly sophisticated attack. Not that a script kiddie couldn't do it once it's been weaponized, but it's incredibly sophisticated. And yes, you can. You know, there's always going to be stuff like that, but you can eliminate the vast majority of problems with some simple stuff.
Yeah, here's what you should look for.
A really basic question, which is my specialty.
Yeah,
is I want to understand this first from the other side for 1 second. What do you have to do to fix the internet so that it is not vulnerable to DDoS attacks?
You can't.
There are things you could do, but it's very hard. So Steve and I talked about this on Security Now a lot. We talked about it recently, last 2 weeks. One thing used to be, if you just made ISPs reject traffic that was spoofed, that had a spoofed IP address that didn't come from their network. So if you're Comcast and you say outbound traffic from Comcast has to come from the Comcast range of IP addresses or we're going to reject it, that would have helped until these days, because initially all these DDoS attacks had to come from computers. And so they had to spoof their IP address. Otherwise, it would be easier to stop them. Now, because of the proliferation of small internet connected devices, they no longer spoof their address. They're coming from real addresses because there's so many of them. You can block it. Doesn't matter. So now one thing Steve and I talked about yesterday is routers should probably have some software on them that watches for this kind of outbound traffic.
Yes.
Because just as an ISP should be responsible for traffic exiting their network, you probably should be responsible for traffic exiting
your home router
to give you.
And again, this is like cherry picking. There's going to always be edge cases of things that are going to get by this. But if you get the vast majority, it really improves things.
Because the reason I'm asking that is that if you have a bunch of dumb, crappy cameras out there, trying to get dumb, crappy hardware made better is going to be really hard to do. It strikes me that you've got to try to fix it at
a
different
very
level.
Good point. Yeah.
There's always going to be dumb, crappy crap out there.
So we talked about this dumb, crappy crap. So I talked about this with Andy Ellis, who is the CSO at Akamai, chief CSO, CTO, CSO. And he also pointed out that while these attacks are huge today, in a couple of years, they're not going to be as significant because the internet itself will be bigger. So everything will scale up, which is kind of an interesting and super hopeful statement, especially because he was like, we're not going to be able to stop this. There are things you can do, like some of the things Leo mentioned.
I'm not sure I agree with him. He's right.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, I know he's super smart and he's Akamai, but there are still, the problem really is that, for instance, DNS servers, there's a small number of these. The 13 canonical DNS networks are vulnerable because there's 13 of them. And you can say the internet's scaling up and it's going to be bigger. But what he's saying is he's pitching a point of view that comes from CDNs and from
it does.
And comes from companies like Cloudflare, which is, oh, don't worry about fixing security. We're just going to mitigate by throwing bandwidth at it. And I think that that is a very foolhardy attitude.
So I'm not saying that we should not do security, but getting ISPs to like block ports is actually quite difficult. His other solution was actually to charge them for it. I don't know if you guys remember. Was it Blue Frog?
That's how you get him to do it. Yeah. You say, hey, the spam. Yeah.
Remember when spam was like a big deal and they started like sending packets back to ISPs?
Comcast did not want to block port 25 for ages, the SMTP port, because they didn't want to pay for the – and think about it. If you have millions of customers, the tech support costs are not insignificant when they call up and say, why is my mail server not working? But they eventually did. They were forced to by things like this, and they now do. You can't run a mail server on your Comcast network for that reason.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which is upsetting too. I mean, it'd be nice if people could run servers out of their homes for things, and that'd be great.
I'm going to push you though on the IoT thing, Stacey. I know that you know you don't want anything to hurt the ecosystem of IoT, but but really, this is a recipe for disaster. Regardless of what you or Andy says, putting all of these dumb, cheap devices online is a recipe for disaster. This is not something that can be ignored at this point.
So we should have, I'm actually a huge believer in, I'll just say it, fines out the wazoo for poorly designed devices and services.
And or block it or say you can't sell it anymore in the U.S.
But you're going to have people making stuff on their own.
Well, I was going to say most of the Mirai botnet computers now aren't even in the U.S., so they're coming from all of, you can't block the sale.
That's what I'm saying. You can try to fix the crappy crap, or you can try to fix the throughput, or you can fix the target.
That's a good point.
So,
right?
I mean,
it's the same problem. You should do all of it. I mean,
sure. But the same problem I have with the fact that if somebody has your name and your social security number, they can ruin your life. What's wrong with that picture?
Right.
Right? That you shouldn't be able to do a transaction with such little information. Right. You got to fix the transactional requirements so that simple little leaks aren't going to be a problem anymore. Same here. If just simply being able to throw out a volume of pings is going to bring down the whole friggin' internet, then that's something, and a nuclear attack won't, something's wrong with that picture.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. But I will say a lot of companies are doing fine things. And if you want to have a connected device, here's what you should look for. Let me just give you some takeaways here. No hard-coded passwords. Things that when you install the device, it forces you to change your password. New Linksys routers do this, for example. You want a vendor that allows over-the-air updates so they can switch things, because that's going to happen. You also want a vendor that is monitoring things. And you may not know this, or you know, a lot of the major companies who offer these devices have some sort of monitoring system to see what their devices are doing and if something happens with them. And you also want to have a bug bounty or a security program so people can report things to you without being worried about being sued, for example. So those are, and then as a consumer, you should pay for quality. And if you're, and this is hard because like if you're an SMB and you're buying a network DVR, you're looking for what's resolution, you know, how much memory do I have on this thing? And then how much does it cost? You're not saying, gosh, is this going to open?
Right.
Am I going to help take down the internet with this?
Part of the problem with this in several of the things you just talked about is that the people who have to make that buying decision don't pay the price for the security problems they're causing.
Oh, and somebody pointed this out. I forgot to say it again. Having the ability to monitor your network traffic to see if it's spiking, because otherwise you're never going to know because it's not.
Right.
So that's important. I don't think that's out. Do you know of any routers or anything that?
Oh, yeah. A lot of routers will do that.
Huh.
Yeah.
Go check mine.
They're the more expensive, more complicated, more difficult to use routers.
I
think there's some hope in this new category of routers like the Eero and the Luma. Linksys is doing one like that where they're managed not by you, but by the manufacturer. So Eero has a very simple, and they're a sponsor, I should mention. Eero has a very simple app that really doesn't give you a huge amount of capability, certainly doesn't let you kind of do that kind of monitoring of things. But they have the ability to, because you're logged into your Eero account, to do that. Now, whether they do, I don't know. But that's one way to solve this is, I mean, if you're a business, you don't, the owner of the business isn't paying attention to security. You hire people to do that for you. And you use appliances. You know, we have big security appliances between Twit and the outside world. And we have a professional guy running it. That's how a business does it. If you're a home, you need that kind of support. You can't be expected to do that, I don't think.
Well, I do think our internet service and our Wi-Fi is going to be delivered as a service going forward.
There you go.
So
that's the way to describe what I just said. You know.
But then people are going to be pissed because people still don't want to pay. Like, I'm constantly shocked at people when I'm like, oh, yeah, my Eero's, they were like $500 for three.
It's too much. I know.
And they're like,
well,
I could buy a router for eight.
The opposite of where cable's going, right? Cable's being forced by the FCC to let you buy your cable box rather than leasing it. What you're basically saying, Leo, is you're leasing the service. And it's another damn monthly fee and we'll get ripped off for it.
Well, you don't have to get ripped off for it. Maybe your cable provider doesn't actually provide you the Wi-Fi service. Maybe you get it from another company. It doesn't have
That's
to come
point.
From
an ISP
Comcast.
Could be very helpful here because they see all that outbound traffic.
Yeah, you know, they really are very active on this.
Yeah, aren't they? well, anyway, it's old, somewhat old news, but you weren't around and I really wanted to get your take on it. I'm glad I asked. You have a lot to say about it.
I have opinions.
And I believe you probably and Kevin talk about it on your IoT podcast.
We did. I actually had two security guests.
Yeah.
One's actually coming out this week. So
good. You're much more up on it than I am probably. Although we do talk about all of this quite a bit on security now as well. This is obviously
Better place.
Yeah. A big source of our conversation.
Does Steve ever get scared?
He never shows it. But I often do. and I ask him, are we losing, you know, and things like that. But he's extremely positive about what we can do. He often, in fact, we have a little segment called You're Doing It Wrong. He'll often call out people who just are kind of incredibly stupid. But, you know, a lot of what we talk about nowadays, and this is kind of what I was alluding to, is that the hackers, white and black hat, are becoming incredibly sophisticated in their ability to suss out problems that they could take advantage of. If you look at how this DRAMer exploit works on Android, and this is the exploit that is potentially going to be a huge problem for all Android phones because it's hardware based. Mm-hmm. It is incredibly sophisticated. I don't even know how they figured this out, and I couldn't in any cogent way describe this to you in less than 20 minutes. But it's a bit flip in RAM basically that they use then to root a phone. And that once it's weaponized, that technique can be used to root your phone remotely in minutes, seconds, even. And the problem is very hard to fix. And according to some, it's not really clear that even the Google Pixel is affected by this. And you can mitigate it a little bit with firmware updates, but not 100%. So the Nexus 4, the Nexus 5, the G4 from LG, Moto G, from last year and the year before, the Galaxy S4, the S5, the One from OnePlus, all have been successfully rooted using the DRAMer tool.
And this requires me to download an app, though, right?
Right. So it'd be a malicious app.
Got it. I always like knowing what I should avoid.
Yeah, we often talk about this. There's exploits, and a lot of the exploits require physical access. I don't worry so much about those. There's exploits that require you to do something stupid, like most Windows malware requires you to execute a program on your computer. But then there are worms, network-based attacks, like Mirai, that require no interactivity on your part.
Yeah, that's
just
scary.
Infect you. And those are the most
dangerous. You also add in there phishing, which requires you to say something stupid.
Right. Stage fright, which predated DRAMer, could happen to you from a malicious MMS that you wouldn't have to open or look at because the way the media player worked on Android is it would automatically render that MMS pre-render it, download it, pre-render it before you looked at it. So that's an example of an exploit that did involve downloading something on your phone, but you didn't have to do anything. You didn't have to install an app or anything. That's why
automated.
But that was fixable and has been, and for anything new, been fixed. Problem, of course, with Android, there's a lot of older stuff that will never be fixed. It's similar to IoT, where a lot of Android devices are very inexpensive phones. The manufacturer, the carrier, and the user are not going to fix it. And so they're going to be sitting out there forever.
Here's another thing about this, though, worth mentioning. We assume it's cheap stuff, but actually I saw in the list of devices the Ubiquiti router. And I was like, what the heck is that doing on there?
There is a fix for that. We talked about that yesterday as well.
Okay.
But it requires you running, you have to update your firmware. You have to download a shell script and update your firmware.
Right. But the thinking was, one, that a lot of these, or some of these, not all of them, are designed for sitting in an enterprise where they have someone who's monitoring the traffic and who's doing a lot of the stuff that a homeowner isn't necessarily doing. So my tip on that is, be careful if you're buying enterprise gear. They're assuming
that's an interesting point. They're assuming you're going to keep it up to date. Yeah, that's why I said very important. IoT device needs to be able to be updated remotely. Firmware needs to be able to update remotely. There was a problem with the Ring doorbell, another sponsor, where if you took the doorbell off, you could analyze it in such a way as to get the homeowner's Wi-Fi password, login and password. Mm-hmm. You'd have to remove it. You'd have to put it back. It wasn't an easy exploit. And to my knowledge, it was never exploited because as soon as Ring learned about it, before it was public, they sent a patch down the line. And all Ring doorbells were patched. And so as soon as you connect your new Ring doorbell, it gets patched if it's not. So that's very, very important. By the way, I want to say one more thing about DRAMer, because you said you have to download an app. But if you combine it with something like Stage Fright, which maliciously sends an MMS to an unpatched phone, Stage Fright can then be used to invoke DRAMer. So this is why it's really dangerous. You can daisy chain exploit. So all you need is one wormish exploit that can be done without any interactivity. So we are seeing DRAMer being used in the wild by taking advantage of the Stage Fright bug, which gets it on the machine and then it's activated.
Another dumb question. It's my specialty.
Yeah.
What? How does the doorbell mama prevent fake mamas from coming in and downloading new mother's milk? I don't know. Sorry, that wasn't. How does Ring prevent?
It wasn't a dumb question,
from,
but boy, the phrasing was dopey.
Boy, I was block that metaphor.
The second key, which we've kind of alluded to, which is authentication, is really important in all of these things. You can't have a default password. So it has to be built into the firmware of a doorbell that, you know, you don't take firmware updates from strangers, is what you're saying. You can only accept firmware updates that are signed by the manufacturer. But we have
certification.
We have a very good mechanism for that kind of authentication, Jeff. It's called
signatures. You feel confident in that. That's what
I'm saying. Excellent. PGP signatures, excellent.
And although this isn't for Wi-Fi, and it's a token issue. Sometimes people will do manufacturers will get a little lazy and they'll just pick a default token.
Oh yeah, so they use the same one on everything.
Yes.
That we've seen as well. Yeah, no, good authentication, not dopey authentication, good authentication. But there are, by the way, it's well known, there are very good authentication methods. When I download updates for Linux, for instance, in every case, or even install Linux, in every case, there's an authentication system that allows me to verify that that came from the person who says it came from the manufacturer.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
This is important. This is relevant. I was in D.C. yesterday, I think it was yesterday, and I was at a panel, and one of the big topics, thanks to Mirai, was IoT security. And I have to tell you guys that the Washington fix is not going to come. It's not happening, because when I was doing this, I was, A, amazed at how wrong some of the information that was shared on the panel was.
Of course.
But two, and there was, okay, so there's a congressman staffer, there's a head of enforcement for the FCC, there's a lawyer. There was a representative from the Consumer Electronics Association that puts on CES. And then there was someone from the Center for Democracy and Technology. Anyway. So that's the panelists. They were focused only on the device. I asked about encryption, which, you know, in Washington is a problem. And they didn't even want to talk about it. And they even said the cloud security, like securing database passwords and stuff in the cloud, was also not on the table. It was tangential. And so that freaked me out to no end, because these regulators are trying to build laws. They're trying to think about repercussions for things. If you're the FTC, for example, you're thinking about fines and how to enforce things like maintaining good database or good password databases. That was kind of a downer.
So I went to a conference today. It's the Foursquare conference, not that Foursquare, but held by Lazard, and it's off the record, so I can't. But last night, Editor Ross Sorkin interviewed John Brennan, the head of the CIA, which it was fascinating. And actually, I was very impressed with Brennan. I'm glad to say. But the discussion that then always ensues in these groups is, encryption and backdoors to encryption, and is it really encryption? And the desire to have secure systems and the desire to have local control, it's going to be in constant conflict.
Okay, well, I don't know why you call me grumpy, because you guys have just brought me down, man. I was all cheery and happy.
Is there a new device we can talk about?
Yes, let's take a break. Let's talk about something.
Let's get into a gadget.
Happy. I got toys. Let's talk about toys. Actually, I have the scariest story. It was not widely reported. We talked a little bit about it on Sunday. The scariest story, I think, of the year coming up in just a second, so stay tuned. But first, a word. This is Happy FreshBooks. If you're a freelancer, if you've got a small business, I can pretty much guarantee you didn't get in business because you loved sending invoices and keeping track of finances and running your accounting, unless you're an accounting business. But then you're doing it for somebody else. I bet you people who run accounting businesses don't even like doing their own invoicing and accounting. It's just not the fun part, right? So FreshBooks lets you do the stuff you got into business to do, the thing you really enjoy, you're really good at, and handles the stuff you need to do to keep the business running. It started for me when I first started using FreshBooks 12 years ago for invoicing, and it is simple and easy and wonderful. But now FreshBooks has been completely redesigned to give you so much more. They've launched the all-new version of their cloud accounting software. By the way, if you're an existing FreshBooks user, you can stay with the old interface if you want, but you should try the new one, because it's been redesigned from the ground up to fit the way you work, so that you don't feel like you're doing accounting. But I'll give you an example. I was talking to the FreshBooks guy, and they said, most small businesses, freelancers, don't even know if they made a profit this year, let alone how much they made. They just don't even know. They assume, well, I'm paying the bills, I think I'm okay. FreshBooks, without any additional effort, will tell you. It'll let you know what your accounts receivable are, what you've been paid this year, what you've paid out in expenses this year. So you get something, I would call it a balance sheet, but it's much easier to read than a balance sheet. By the way, we'll do a balance sheet for your accountant and so forth. It all starts with the invoices. You can create professional, easy invoices in less than 30 seconds. No formatting, no formulas. Your logo's on it. You get paid faster because there's a pay me button on every invoice. And by the way, your clients want to get rid of the paperwork too. So they tend to pay you up to, on average, 4 days faster. And you'll also know whether they've seen it, which I really like. The clients sometimes, the bad ones, will say, oh, I didn't get your invoice. Oh, I didn't see that. Well, now you could say, well, no, I can see you saw it. You opened on October 27th at 3 p.m. Whoa, yeah, so I did. there's a super handy deposit feature, so you can invoice for a payment up front as you kick off a project, so you don't have to pay out of pocket. I mean, I can go on and on. I want you to take a look. It's very easy, 30-day free trial. If you just go to FreshBooks.com/twig, if you're trying to do this with some other system that's complicated, hard to use, you shouldn't have to learn double entry bookkeeping to do what you love. You just need FreshBooks. You'll get all the stuff behind the scenes that your accountant wants, and you'll get the stuff in the dashboard that you can really use to see how you're doing, to invoice, to keep track of what's going on. FreshBooks.com/twig saved my life. Now let it save yours. FreshBooks.com/twig. All I ask when they say, how did you hear about us? Just write in This Week in Google, would you? That way they'll know you heard it on the show, and we'll keep getting the ad revenue, which is important because all these donuts don't come cheap. We are talking with Stacey Higginbotham from Stacey on IoT. You might remember her from GigaOM. And in fact, If you follow her on Twitter, it's Giga Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y. She's in Austin, Texas, and from New York, New York, just off Times Square, Jeff Jarvis. He's at the City University of New York. You're doing, what are you doing, some sort of election thing at CUNY on Tuesday?
Oh, yeah, I was going to talk about that later, but we're doing Election Land, which is a joint venture of many folks, including Google, I believe, Facebook. If you just Google Election Land, and I just screwed it up. It's a ProPublica effort, and it's
ProPublica. I love
ProPublica is great.
Please give them a kiss for me.
We're going to be the headquarters at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism newsroom for this effort, which will be looking at any efforts to suppress voter efforts around the country. Whatever that means, yeah. You know, bad polling or thugs showing up or whatever. So ProPublica, Google News Lab, WNYC, CUNY, First Draft Coalition, which was started by Google, Univision, USA Today, and others. And so we'll have all the headquarters journalists here at CUNY in the newsroom next Tuesday. And it's all kitted out, and even Google's helping us bring new networks that work better and all kinds of great stuff. And we'll be broadcasting, and then we'll get reports in. The social media desk, our social media journalists will be looking at trends that are out and finding out where there seems to be reports of problems. We'll also get reports in. We'll turn that back around to newsrooms around the country so they can report on it. And then I'm going to be doing, Facebook Live on my Mevo much of the day, just me blathering. They wanted me to do the official one. I said, no, you don't want me to do that. That would be a bad idea.
You've been using that a lot, though. I've been watching your .nyc, and you have a new show.
Well, we're trying some new experiments. Yeah.
And it's fun. You're really using Facebook Live to great advantage.
We're trying it. We're just trying things. Yeah. So we're trying the movie. So we're going to have two Facebook Live feeds. One is the official one where they'll be saying what's going on, what are we finding in the trends. And then I'll be blathering on about the election and showing off my pin. And, that's why they don't want me to be official. And then we'll have a uplink to any broadcasters will be coming and doing remotes from the newsroom, and we have journalists and 60 journalism students and these news organizations. It's going to be quite something. So if you see any problem with your election, any problem at all, I'll tell you about one myself in a second. Just Google Election Land, and you can text Election Land to 69866. You can find that on that page, or click a link there to submit a report. Now, let me tell you,
that's a good thing to be doing.
It's a very good thing to be doing, and we'll know what's really happening. And no, this is not about rigging the election, folks. This is about voter suppression.
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I was going to ask how you guys were dealing with no phones being allowed in polling places, or no phones being allowed in the voting.
I think you can have them at polling places. You know why they do that, by the way? I found out this on This Week in Law.
Yeah.
Because if you were going to buy someone's vote, you would need proof that they voted. And, of course, you can't follow them into the booth. So one way to do this would be for you to Snapchat or post an Instagram a picture of your ballot from the voting booth. And so the reason that's illegal in many states, and the reason they don't want you to bring a cell phone in there, is so that you can't use it to verify that you're
Which I understand. However, I think it's a bit antiquated because of the joy of voting and showing people who are voting. I think is a better result.
I agree. And, we did, by the way, and then I'll let you tell us your story, but we did a great triangulation on Monday with two of the founders of verifiedvoting.org, which is about making elections. It is about rigging. It's about making elections fair, using or not using technology. Using technology appropriately in elections. And it was really a great conversation with Ron Rivest, who is a legend in crypto circles. He's a creator of the RC Cipher and RSA. And his colleague about, which county. It's, by the way, very hard to rig an election in the U.S. because every county has a different system. Systems are used? But there are some troubling still. These direct electronic voting systems are still used in three states. And these are kind of eminently hackable because they don't have a paper trail. And so most areas now, though, have a form of paper trail auditing. And one of the things we talked about, Stacey, was VoteStar, which is a proposed system from your own registrar of voters in Austin. And it's not yet in place. It won't be for this election, but it probably will be in a few years. A new way of voting that is a tamper-proof and reliable, StarVote, that's the name of it, auditable, snappy, because one of the things, one of the criteria is you want, criteria is that you want the results in a timely fashion. It's really great. Anyway, if you haven't listened to a triangulation from Monday on our election fraud issue, please do listen to that because it was really great. In fact, I'm very pleased that one of the candidates in California for he was running for, what was he running for? I think Assembly or maybe Secretary of State, Ron Nehring. He came by. He's a Republican, but very tech savvy. Asked me if we were going to cover these issues, you know, safe voting, electronic voting. I said, yeah, use it. And he's now passed that show around, tweeted it and told people all about it because he, like many of us, is worried about this kind of using of electronic means that aren't really very, you know, it's the Internet of Things all over again. You don't want the Internet of voting machines.
Yeah.
Bad idea. So you had a suppression experience?
Well, let me mention one thing first quickly, which is that give a shout out to my friend, to our friend, Craig Newmark, that we needed to feed these hungry journalists. And I went to Craig and asked for some support for the school to do this. And Craig stepped up. So the pizza's on Craig and
Craig's
more.
List. That's great.
Because I never know my travel schedule, never know what's going to be, I've been on absentee ballots for years.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And I get the absentee ballots. We have four of them in our house. And the kids were home. And we all filled out our ballots. And then we all mailed them. Two of them came back to us.
Why?
Because on the back of the envelope, the voting commission, whatever it's called in my county, puts on a sticker with the name and address of the voter and a barcode so that they can verify this is from voter number, you know, voter X. And this is the only one we got from voter X, and we're going to throw away that outside envelope now that we know voter X has voted, so he can't vote again. But we're going to separate that from the inside envelope with a ballot, right? That's the system. So they need the voter's name and such on the outside, and they need to have it barcoded so that they can handle it in mass. Well, guess what? The USPS bought new equipment. The new equipment couldn't tell the front from the back. It read the barcode on the back, and it sent it back to us.
Oh, that's imagine sad.
It's really sad. And imagine if you're a snowbird. Let's say that you have an absentee ballot and you're down in Florida and you voted and you don't know it, but you're going to get back after the winter is over, back to your home in New Jersey, and you're going to find your ballot there sent back to you.
Wow. That wouldn't be so good.
It's a real problem, and it hasn't gotten much attention.
Well, here's one of the things. As long as it's not completely widespread and it's not partisan, you know, it's evenly distributed. Although I guess you could argue that people who vote by mail might be more likely to be older Republicans. I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think they're actually service male vote. Voters are Democratic more often.
Really?
Aren't they?
Interesting.
Really?
Huh.
The early voters were Democratic.
Let me see if voters by mail.
So something kind of cool. I've been doing this on Facebook. New York Times has a bot, a politics bot, that will message you. Have you seen this, Jeff? This is the first time I liked a bot.
Really?
So every morning I'd get a message on my Facebook Messenger from the bot, and then
I don't know if I can bear it.
Well, yeah. The bot is Nick. He's an actual person. Today's big news, the weirdness of 2016 in a nutshell, FBI, new emails. Then you can click tell me more. It'll give you more. You can ask. It gives you some canned responses. How so? Will it? And then after it runs out, you can say, give me a menu or thanks. And it gives you a thumbs up. And this was one thing I kind of liked. They've wound it up now, I think. I got a survey asking if we would like more of these things. But here's one that just came in at 9 a.m., my daily forecast. And then I'll ask it for the latest polls, and it gives me the polls. I have to log in. Never mind. I have to log in.
Well, do me a favor and go to getpurple.io.
Is that another bot?
It's another bot, and it comes from one of our entrepreneurial students, and it's quite the hot bot. It's being talked about a lot in a lot of circles.
So I'm not a huge fan of bots, but I have to say that one was pretty good. So this one is interactive election update. So this is one to sign up for before Election Day.
Or even now, yes. Yeah. And it's intended for a millennial audience.
Sure.
It's conversational, but she'll enter in as a human too occasionally and answer questions that aren't being answered and so on. And Rebecca Harris is the name of the entrepreneur who was in our program, and it's getting quite the attention.
Good for her. Well, I'm signing up right now.
Good.
You obviously don't want a lot of these. I think it is kind of aimed at millennials because they, by the way, here's a news story. Did you see Amazon has introduced a new book reading app for kids?
No.
This is it. It's called Rapids, Amazon Rapids, and it's book reading via Messenger. Do you have my over-the-shoulder shot there, Karsten? I don't know if you've got that. He says he sort of does. Let's just find it. Here it is. So I'll launch it. And so, it looks like a crash, so I'll reopen it. Fun short stories for kids. Let's just do a sample story here. Gordon just got a strange text. And then you tap. Alien, where should we land so Earthlings don't see us? Gordon, Earthlings. And you tap. Yeah, we won't. So this is a storybook.
Oh, it's cuter than I thought it was going to be.
That's fun. Yeah, that's using the text format.
I thought it was going to cut up War and Peace into tweet length.
No, it's kids and young adult books. But since they're comfortable with it, say, by the way, get some reading, right? And reading a sentence at a time. It's not overwhelming.
It's the modern comic book.
Yeah, and it's always dialogue, although I understand that there could be pictures and videos and so forth. But it's whenever there's a back and forth dialogue, it kind of makes sense to do this. I don't know. This is Rapids. It just came out. This is the free sample that they give you, but you can also buy these short stories if you're an Amazon customer. Rapids, $3 a month. Oh, that's how it works. Okay, I didn't know that. So you subscribe.
That's super fun. Remember when the Japanese people, there was that trend, I think, of novels via Twitter, like people were writing novels.
That was so weird.
So yeah, I think it'd be fun to have more storytelling options in playing around with this. So why not?
Kids reading, nothing wrong with that in a format that they're comfortable with. The picture showed a tablet, which probably makes more sense than a little phone. But
because there's not a lot of, like, if you look at kids' books, like my daughter first saw a phone, like a landline phone, in a picture book. Like,
what's that, mommy?
What is that? So you think about it, it makes sense that you would have this kind of,
oh my God,
bringing all that in.
She's getting so old now. She's asking about phones and records. And mommy, what was it like to walk inside a bank? All right. You want a scary future story? We talked about this a little bit on the Twit. So Google has an AI it's a neural network, learning network, that has devised its own crypto algorithm that no one knows how it works. There are three parties in this: Alice, Bob, and Eve. Each network was given a specific goal. Alice had to send a secure message to Bob. Bob had to try and decrypt the message, and Eve had to try and eavesdrop on the message and try to decrypt it too. Alice and Bob started with a shared secret key. They weren't told what encryption was or how to encrypt or what crypto techniques to use. They were just given a failure condition, and they did it. And they came up with a crypto algorithm that solved the problem, and researchers don't really know how they did it. So now they've got the bots talking to each other and we can't understand it.
I think that story is very scary just because of the picture they used in the headline above that. I'm like, dear God, who's that man?
I think it's fascinating, and I'm sure it's just, artificial intelligence research. That's the Terminator.
That is the Terminator. Yes. I did know the Terminator.
Okay.
But there's got to be a filter over it. The filter is extra scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Very clever. That's Sebastian Anthony writing in Ars Technica, UK. So I think that's interesting, don't you? Artificial intelligence used to create crypto algorithms that even its creators don't know how it works.
This sounds scary, and it may feel scary, but we've got to remember, computers are not people. And when we start thinking about AI, we always anthropomorphize them. And
we assume the worst.
Well, we assume the worst, but we also, like, why would we expect to understand computers talking to each other? I don't understand my modem, which is computers talking to each other.
Right. Ooh, great point, Stacey.
Some people do. I just want to point out.
Well, Okay,
true. You may not, but that's ones and zeros.
Sheldon does.
I understand what it's doing. It's demodulating and modulating ones and zeros, and it can be.
Yeah, but you couldn't speak its language.
But we couldn't speak it. That's what I'm getting to. Like we understand. Like no, I understand I what it means.
I could create a device that would understand.
You would. Okay. Yeah. And so the point here that we should focus on is that we can't create a device or create a translation engine for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have no idea what it did. And maybe who knows? Maybe they do. We had Jerry Kaplan. Speaking of, I'm going to give another plug to Triangulation. The week before, Jerry Kaplan, you may remember from Go. He's a serial entrepreneur, created On Sale, a lot of great stuff. Has a good book on artificial intelligence. And unlike many of the people we've talked about AI with, he says, yeah, exactly what you say, Stacey. Why do we assume that it's going to be, we're anthropomorphizing it? These are just dumb machines. It's not. As smart as they get, they're never going to be more than servants. It's not a problem. He doesn't believe in the singularity, in other words.
Oh, man. Masa, I can't think of his first name. Is it Masa? The chairman of SoftBank gave this whole present.
Yeah, Masayoshi Son. Yeah.
Masayoshi Son. He gave this whole presentation at Arm TechCon all about the singularity coming and there being a trillion connected devices. And, wow. I was kind of like...
It's
Meta.
Easy to say.
It's hard to do.
Hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, just connecting, 100 devices in my home, I'm not closer to the singularity at all.
No. In fact, anybody who uses technology knows we're not even, it was so long ago. Google Pixel, I've been playing with it, and I told Jeff last week not to buy one. Maybe I shouldn't say that. I don't know.
Oh, we go again. So I still home and I haven't opened it.
Oh, I just don't know. You're lucky you've got one. Google apparently is missing the ship date for a lot of people. And they're sending $50 play credits to Pixel buyers with missed delivery windows. I ordered the small one, the Pixel 5-inch Pixel with 128 gigs in extra black or whatever they call it. And they just debited my credit card. And it's now moved from, processing to... And, they have these code words.
That's where my Google Home is.
Yeah, mine too. It's supposed to come next week, right after the election. Exciting, huh?
I'll be in California. I won't even get to open it.
I installed a plug socket just for the Google Home.
No.
Yeah. I know where I'm at.
Where are you putting it?
It's going to be in my closet.
Wait, what?
What?
Why do you want it in your closet?
It's the only room in the house that doesn't have an Amazon Echo.
You're going to just have to move one of the Echoes. Come on.
No. Well, I spent a lot of time in the closet.
Okay, go ahead. You can talk about it. It's all right. Yeah. You're among friends.
Mine is actually going, I'm putting mine in the bathroom. So it's a little stranger.
Our closet is off the bathroom, so it's kind of closet bathroom.
Okay. So I don't have a...
Oh, yes. Echo. Oh, I thought you were going to say you don't have a lot of square footage.
I thought he was going to say I don't have a bathroom. That's what's really confusing. No, because I think that I will use the Google Home in the morning, right, as I'm dressing, as I'm getting ready for work, that kind of thing. So it will be somewhere where I can talk to it during my morning ablutions. And because I think that's how I'm going to use it. Although it has apparently good speakers that are better than the Echo's speakers. So
you can play music while you're in the shower. We actually have a Sonos speakers installed in our bathroom for that very reason.
I have a Sonos Play 5 in my bathroom too. Hey, have you yet received the update so that you can use your Amazon Echo to get your Sonos doing stuff?
No, but even if I had, I haven't been home.
Apparently not.
I know. So I'm like, I have a box full of gadgets. I've got two Yikes. New routers and Yikes. Some other stuff.
Somebody said I should rename it the Google Throne.
the air freshener add-on would
it
be
it does look
there.
A little like a new air freshener, I have to admit. Google says adoption of the Pixel is surpassing the Nexus 6P or did in its first week, but the problem is they can't make them fast enough. Actually, this is from App Boy, which actually has pretty good data. Google's not saying, but App Boy looks at which devices are downloading apps and so forth. Pixel has reached 0.016% of market share. Pixel XL, 0.02% of market share in 1 week. Took the 6P 2 weeks to get to a similar level. Google is not in the phone stores, which I think is going to hurt it. Only Verizon has the Pixel.
Yeah, but Timo has this deal where if you bring your Pixel into them, they give you like half off.
Yeah, but only on the 32 gig model, which baffles me.
That's weird. Huh.
I don't know.
You'll use more data.
Exactly. Bingo.
You can't store anything on this device, so you've got to use data.
All right, Leo. So I've got to make the decision finally.
Well, you saw the one picture that convinced one tech editor that the Pixel was the right phone.
It was quite lovely,
Better than the iPhone. I took a photo with the Pixel, says Vlad Zavov of The Verge, that changed my mind about the iPhone. But, you know, I think this is extremely not useful because I think you could take any camera phone, even kind of a crappy one, and in exactly the right circumstances, get a great picture. This is just down the street from you, a rainy night in New York
City. Because New York is always beautiful.
Yeah. But it's it's dark. Sometimes some people say that the iPhone overdoes the grain in dark. I don't know. So, and it is truly an excellent camera. I will grant you that. I like the form factor. I think it doesn't bother me that it's not waterproof, although that bothers some people. If you're going to use an Android phone, I think this is the best Android phone. So, but you already have a 6P, which is the next best. Mm-hmm.
You're not helping, Leo.
I know.
I want you to.
I'm not upgrading.
You're not.
No.
You're going to stay with a 6P.
I've got the 5X, which is even worse phone than the 6P, and I'm still not upgrading.
Why not?
Oh,
too much money. It's very expensive.
It's expensive. I've got to buy an iPhone to work my gadget magic. So
isn't that interesting? So a lot of the stuff that you're playing with can't be done on Android.
That's almost always the case. Like,
wow.
Once Apple bought Test Flight, you know, all Android users were screwed.
Wow. Test Flight is not nearly as good a solution for developers as Android is. Test Flight allows you to give beta versions of your program to users without, you know, kind of bypassing the App Store. But it was so easy to do an APK on Android that, you don't need Test Flight on an Android.
But if you've got a shortage of time and energy, you're going to develop for the iPhone first.
I guess you're right.
Still, especially for these products, they're expensive early adopter products.
Yeah, and iPhone people are early adopters who buy expensive products.
I wouldn't say they're early adopters.
Actually,
I mean,
I guess you're right.
I feel like Android people are probably more early adopters on most things, but someone's got an iPhone in the house.
Yeah,
and it's easier. You don't have to have like 50 apps. You have your iPhone app.
You know what would really put me, I think, over the top on the Pixel and make it my daily driver?
Okay.
Is if they would just freaking get your messaging story straight. I don't know what to use for messaging. They want me to use Google's messages, which is terrible. I like Hangouts, but if Allo would just become the... why is Allo not yet the default messaging app on the Pixel?
And now there's a new version. Is it
2.0?
I haven't downloaded it.
Who's using that? I couldn't find Kevin Toefel the other day for the podcast. I had to find. So we do Skype. So I'm like paying him on Skype. Then I'm like, well, I found him on Allo, and then I'm like paying him on Hangouts. It was just ridiculous. I'm sending this message to Kevin like six different times. We just have a time zone.
Because you don't know which messaging client he uses. You can use Facebook Messenger. I bet Facebook Messenger would be my... but I don't really want to use Facebook for all my SMSs either.
Oh, I didn't even think about Facebook. Jeebus.
You know what? Facebook, by the way, is the lingua franca for most of us. If you can always reach through Facebook. Almost always.
You can never reach me through Facebook.
I know, because you don't use it. You're the one person.
I know.
Facebook announced, by the way, their earnings right before the show. And they beat the street in almost every respect. 1.67 billion monthly active users.
I thought you were going to tell me how much money they made.
Oh. A lot more too. Than one. Not more
Stacy.
Than. Yeah. Let's see. Here, let me give you the actual statistics from investor. Oh, no, that's the old one. Let me get the new one. That's July.
1 billion active on WhatsApp. 1 billion active on Messenger, 500 million active on Instagram.
Jeez.
7.01 billion in revenue.
59% increase in revenue year over year. 59% in advertising revenue. So clearly they figured out the advertising revenue, right?
Well, but didn't they have that? It wasn't a huge deal, but didn't they miscount a bunch of stuff a couple months ago and they had to come fresh? So this is that quarter.
Ah, 56% increase in revenue, 28% increase in costs, net income up 166% to $2.3 billion for 3 months.
160% profit on revenue growth of how much?
Revenue growth is 56%.
So they're getting more profitable?
Yes.
Nice.
Earnings per share, 82%. That's up 165%. This was a massive quarter. Daily active users, 1.18 billion. Daily. Monthly active users, 1.79 billion. Mobile daily. So I said the daily active users were 1.18 billion. Mobile daily, 1.09 billion.
Jesus.
Almost all.
Web Schmeb.
You said it here last. Also, monthly active users, 1.79, of which 1.66 billion were mobile. Incredible. Increase on mobile of 20% year over year. Mobile advertising revenue, 84% for the third quarter, up from 78%. So they've licked mobile. They know it. They've got it. They own it. Mark Zuckerberg said, we had another good quarter.
I'm buying a cashmere hoodie.
Yeah, we had another good quarter. We are making progress putting video first across our apps and executing our 10-year technology roadmap. So we were talking about the election, and now I have one more thing to watch, which is your election HQ. But this is going to be an interesting – it is every 4 years, right? It gets more and more interesting. Where are you going to watch election results? I bet you're going to watch on Twitter, Stacey.
Probably Twitter. I'm going to be out of town, so I'll probably, I'm in California.
Well, let's say you were home, because that's not a fair test.
Well,
Would you have the TV on and have it on a news channel?
I actually like going to bars and watching it with people, believe it or not.
It's like a soccer match.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
It could
be. In Austin, it could be really dangerous.
Nah, in Austin, please.
Austin's a toss. I mean, Texas is a toss up, but Austin, we know where Austin's going. Let's see. I think for me, news channel on the TV, TweetDeck running with the main feed, but a few extra accounts in the on the columns. I guess you could watch Twitter now, right? Because Twitter's going to have, who are they going to have? Is BuzzFeed live streaming?
Yeah, so you can watch Twitter on BuzzFeed. I have the New York Times open too, just for fun.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Just for credibility's sake.
So what will BuzzFeed look like? What will BuzzFeed election coverage be like? It's millennial aimed, right?
A bunch of short videos about
the cats of the candidates.
No, I mean the this news division has a is now a separate them. Thing,
right? And they have very good people there.
They do. They have wonderful journalism, actually,
which is so weird for me. I don't get it.
It is.
You know, I just read somebody posted on Twitter probably. A link to a Gawker article. Was it Gawker? One of those. I think it was Gawker article about all the new media and who. And the question was, who's going to be around in a year? All of them survived. Gawker did not. So that's, I don't know, kind of funny. By the way, that settlement has now happened. Gawker settled with Hulk Hogan, $31 million, down from $110 million. The final settlement. It's over. Nobody cares. Allo 2.0 update brings app shortcuts, a GIF keyboard, and other new features. I haven't seen it yet, but I guess it's coming out.
See what version I have.
Wait, a GIF keyboard?
Yeah.
Oh.
And finally, let's see. Let me. I guess you can tell if you have the Allo if you long press it. Yeah, I have new conversation. So you long press, you get a new conversation. I'm not going to show it because I have phone numbers and stuff in there. Anyway, to get back to what started this all, I want Allo to do a better job of Google to do a better job of its messaging strategy. Just feel like.
But how does that? You said that would make the difference with the phone. That's an Uber Android issue. Not.
I guess it is. It's true.
Oh, I have version 2.0.
Oh, you do.
Oh, Jeff, you're so fancy.
I am Portante.
Fancy person. I still am.
So what do I get here? So I can talk
keyboard.
To Leo. I'm going to talk to Leo.
Oh, yeah. The only person I've ever alloed with is Jeff.
So there it is. I'm going to send Leo some pants.
You can send me pants? Gosh, I could.
Now I'll send you a hat to go with them. Because you like your hats. No, it's another hat.
Now, what's funny is I guess I have Allo on my Apple phone. So you're sending it to the Apple phone.
Oh, really?
Well, and that's one thing I don't like about Allo is it's phone number specific. So unlike Hangouts, I have one Hangout inbox on all my phones. I have a different Allo inbox for every phone. So Jeff sent me pants. Hey, these are just emojis, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm just doing it. Sorry, Carsten.
Let me see here. Right, let me press a button here. That's it. I just sent you a dragon. Why? Because it was the only thing that
was there.
It was there.
I don't know that I get the point. What else is new on this version of Allo?
I don't think anything's new. It just looks the same. You could show this now. Allo would like to access my photos. Yeah, I don't care about that. I could take a picture. Yeah, this doesn't look new to me. But this is this is not.
It Android. Says 2.0.
This is not Android.
Excuse me.
Yeah, I can't see it. This is the problem I have. So this Allo on the Pixel is a different Allo inbox than the Allo on the iPhone because it's a different phone number. So you're sending it to my iPhone. So let me send you here. I'll send you a message from here.
What's new on it?
What? Something exciting just happened, ladies and gentlemen. For the latest, we go to Stacy Higginbotham on a street somewhere in Austin, Texas. Stacy?
Oh, this is from Scooter X in the chat room. And I was not caring about Allo as much. And he sent a thing about Harry Potter magic coming to Google from 9to5Mac. And we are going to be able to say Lumos.
Oh.
And our flashlight's going to come on.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We have to say, okay, Google, Lumos.
Oh, and then yeah. You can
do Silencio. And your ringer will turn
now,
off.
Now, this was an Amazon Echo task. Some time ago, where I think I mentioned it on this show, all the different spells you could add. But this is going to be now part of inside the, so I could do that in my phone with, by just saying, okay, Google, and then.
Silencio.
Silencio.
Oh my
God.
My messenger icon just changed too. So something changed there. I don't know.
So I did it on my Pixel and it just said righto.
Oh, maybe it's giving
Lumos. Lumos. Oh, it
and
is.
And Knox turns it off.
It
Knox
did do it. It what? Look, you can show it now.
If you do that in Allo or where?
Over the shoulder.
Okay, Google, right? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Google.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So I said, Lumos.
Okay, Google.
And it shows the flashlight. And then, I should point out that it's on. And then I Knox. And it turned off.
Okay, Google doesn't work.
I'm so excited. Sorry, Carsten.
Avada Kedavra.
Lumos.
Oh, that, it doesn't. Yeah. It won't kill anybody for you, unfortunately.
You know what mine did? Here, I said Lumos.
Expelliarmus.
Let's see what it said.
Yours is not up to date, apparently.
Well, but look what it did. I said Lumos, and it read it as
blue balls.
And it's
you need to work on your enunciation.
I guess Lumos, is that it?
At Lumos, yes.
At Lumos.
No, just Lumos.
This is supposed to be like a fun kid-friendly command here, Jeff. And what do you do?
Let's see. Oh, you know what happens when you have those dementors on your tail? You have to say what is it? Patronus?
You make a Patronus, but I don't remember
what is
the
Patronus? What is the Patronus command? No.
Quick, get me a 25-year-old.
Harry Potter's Patronus.
When you turn it off, it says command. Knox.
Mm-hmm. You can say Knox to turn it off.
What is the Patronus charm? Come on, chat room.
Summon a Patronus.
Oh, Expecto Patronum. Here we go.
Oh.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Okay, Google. Expecto Patronum. It translated it. It's Latin. So, I await a guardian.
Oh, that's actually kind of cool. I did not know that. I guess it makes sense, a patron.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Expecto Patronum.
This is about the geekiest moment we've ever
I knew
had.
Avada Kedavra, though, I gotta say.
Okay, this isn't geeky at all.
It's the killing curse. It won't kill anybody. Your phone will not kill anybody for you.
Oh, if it's a Samsung, it might. Sorry.
Do you think they're getting paid? I bet you they are, because there's a new Harry Potter movie coming out, right?
That was, okay, so that's actually what I wanted to, after I got excited, I was going to say, look, this is a whole new merchandising tactic, and how interesting is that?
Remember, you could explore Bruce Wayne's manor? On Maps, now you'll be able to take a trip down memory lane and visit Fantastic Beasts 1926 New York on Google Maps. You can also visit the Magical Congress of the USA, Steen National Bank, the Underground Speakeasy, the Blind Pig, the Magical Apartment of Tina and Queenie Goldstein. This is all from the movie. This is a Google blog post. Cast a spell with. So this is a Warner Brothers promotion. That's smart.
Yeah,
I hope they don't take out Lumos. That's good.
I have long wanted, like, once I brought back my wand from Harry Potter World, I really wanted it to work with all the commands, like to be able to raise my shades and stuff.
I know, but it's really a cheat, because when you're in the store, it does stuff. Then you leave and it doesn't do crap.
Right.
How much was the wand? Because I ended up not buying one because I knew I was going to be disappointed.
There, I think it was $40.
Oh my God, for a stick of wood.
Yeah. They're pretty, though. Some of them are very nice.
They're lathed, and each one has different, just like the real Harry Potter ones, magical beasts, hairs, and feathers. And what
They've
did you get?
Carvings.
What did you get?
Oh, Lord.
You don't remember?
I could show it to you.
This is your wand.
Yeah,
you know, just remember this. The wizard doesn't choose the wand. The wand chooses the wizard, Stacey.
So my daughter, they do this whole ceremony,
yeah.
And she was
did
the
she
one
get picked?
Who... She got picked. So nice. She's in there. And then they gave her her wand at the end. And she was like, yeah, I don't actually want this one. And she went and got it.
Good for her. But was that one free? I always wondered that.
No, it is not free.
You still have to pay for it, even if you were you were part of the demo. You should get that for free.
I should have argued that. What was I thinking?
Yeah. Come on.
Too much butterbeer.
You know what? Yeah, that butterbeer, man. That stuff will put you in a diabetic coma. Holy cow. Don't make you drunk, but it'll make you woozy.
Oh, it's terrible. Your heart rate's going like.
Yes, it did. It was like. All right. I don't know. We lost our way here somewhere. Jeff's not even helping. He's playing with his Expecto Patronum.
I'm not a Harry Potter guy.
Yeah, I could tell that. All right. We could talk about Tango and Daydream, both emerging for the first time into the wild. But first, a word from our favorite registrar of all time, Hover.com. I'm so glad to welcome him back. We use Hover like crazy, whether they were a sponsor or not. I'm all in on Hover. In fact, Steve Gibson, who was looking to move his domains, and he asked on Twitter, what should I get? And the consensus was Hover, and he's very happy. You will be happy too. 400 domain extensions, of course, .com, .net, but all sorts of fun niche extensions, like .design, .tech. I've registered a ton of domains at Hover for all sorts of silly purposes, partly because it's so easy to do. I am a huge fan of Hover.com. I have, let's see, I registered, you might like this, Stacey. In fact, I'll give it to you if you want. GiggleOM.
No.
No, you don't want GiggleOM?
No.
Come on, you could... No? Really?
No, thank you. No. I'm sorry.
You don't want GiggleOM? All right.
It makes me think of like small children and then OM. And
yeah, it goes together, doesn't it?
I've got like a baby body with OM's head on it in my head. I'm like, no.
That's
no.
Exactly. So that was what the plan was to make a website with OM just giggling like a bobblehead.
I'm trying to picture OM giggling. I've known that man for 8 years.
He seems like he would giggle. He doesn't giggle.
He's
not a giggler.
Giggle.
Yeah.
God, I would think he's a giggler. Okay. I have twit.agency, twit.careers, twit.company, twit.equipment, twit.expert, twit.tv, of course, twit.watch, twitlive.com, twitlive.tv, twitquestions.com. It's so easy to register a domain name, and it's so affordable at Hover. And what's great about Hover, you don't have to, if you've ever used some of those other guys, you think you've registered the domain, and then there's page after page of checkboxes. Do you want this? Do you want that? Do you want this? Do you want that? Never with Hover. For instance, you know you want Whois privacy, right? So people can't look up your phone number on the net, because Whois is a public database. Hover gives that to you free and automatically as part of your domain registration. Hover doesn't do a lot of extra stuff. They only offer domains and email. So you focus on getting the domain name you want and then get back to work. Unlike most other domain providers, they do include Whois privacy with all supported domains, so your information is confidential. And if you already have a bunch of domains, as I did, scattered over a bunch of different providers, save money by bringing them all to Hover with volume discounts. The more domains in your account, the more of a discount you get automatically. No more digging through help articles to find out how to get your domain name working either. And if you ever have a problem, Hover's famous no-hold humans online tech support, it's awesome. They will help you, and they will not put you on hold, and they will not hang up till your job is done, till they've solved. But look at all the website builders, portfolio tools, personal homepages that support Hover, everything from Weebly and WordPress to Tumblr to Facebook, Google Plus, Flickr, Twitter. It makes it very easy for you to do the integration you want. Hover.com. I am a big fan. It's who I use to register my domain names, and I highly recommend it. It's who Steve uses. And now you get 10% off your first purchase if you go to Hover, H-O-V-E-R.com. And use the promo code TWIG. Hover.com, promo code TWIG to get 10% off your brand new domain names. I just looked, 54 domain names at Hover. I use them for my email too, which is really nice. I mean, the email gets forwarded to Gmail. This is, by the way, a really great tip, and I don't know why everybody doesn't do this. You may move email providers from time to time. Maybe you use your ISP now, you want to use Google, maybe you were on Yahoo Mail and you want to get off. You don't want to tell everybody, oh, I got a new email, and constantly do that. Simple. Go to hover.com and get a domain name, like your family name. I have leolaporte.com. And then that's going to be your email address. And then you work with Hover, and they will forward any number of addresses to wherever you want. I have it forwarded to Gmail. It couldn't be easier. Very good use for a domain name. It doesn't have to just be for a web page. Hover.com. Use the offer code TWIG and save 10%. Apparently there is an animation. Oh, that's right, Bleak. You did that for us.
I just clicked on it.
Is it good?
It's nice.
Yeah.
I would say that's not a giggle.
It's not a giggle?
I don't know if that's a giggle.
That's a jolly, that's a jolly, jolly laugh. Isn't he a sweetheart?
He is.
He is just the best. God, he's howling. He really enjoyed that one, whatever it was. Whatever somebody said, that was. I'm putting that on Giggle Ohm right now.
Oh, that's true. We could just find all the pictures. I've got to have video of Ohm laughing.
Yeah. See, now you like Giggle Ohm.
What motivated you to do that? What was the moment when you decided I had to own Giggle Ohm?
I'm sure it was on the air, and somebody said something, and I said, "Quick to Hover." I'm sure.
Yeah, there is a URL.
Did I ever tell you the story of Buzz Machine?
No.
So I was talking with Nick Denton on chat.
Of all people,
quite a number of years ago, just as he was starting Gawker, and I was trying to explain what a company that I was on the board of that has since gone away. It was Plastic, the company that owned what was the shoot fish in the barrel site? Joey Anoff, all that stuff.
You're talking ancient internet history.
So anyway, so I was trying to talk about what the company did. It was really trying to be early chat. And I said, Nick, I said, it's a buzz machine. And Nick comes back and says, that's a great domain. I'm taking it.
Oh.
And I said, no the hell way you are. So I rushed.
Oh, you had a race.
I raced to a higher price, domain. He was still trying to come up with a name for Gawker, I think, actually. Yeah, he was. He was still debating the name of Gawker. And so I rushed and got it for myself and said, F you, Nick. And so then I owned it. And then at some point I said, well, do you want it for Gawker? And no, it was below him. It wasn't good enough for him. It wasn't cool enough for him. And so then when I started the blog originally, it was called, I was on Blogger, and I called it World War III because it was after 9/11. Decided that wouldn't last very long and shouldn't. So I needed a name for a blog. So I looked, I own Buzz Machine. That's how I got it.
It was a twit from August 14th, 2011. Episode 314. I'm told by the chat room, Om Nom Nom Nom.
Nice.
Poor Om. No wonder he doesn't come on the show anymore. Too much humiliation. The Yoda of tech. Except he doesn't talk backwards. He really is, though, isn't he? Like the grand wise man of tech.
I watch people like the entire GSMA. Yeah. They came in and they literally sat in a circle around Om and he just talked to them and told them. And the best part was being Om, he's like, you guys are doing everything all wrong.
And they listened.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like,
love it. If this, then that integration from Google Assistant, you didn't know about this?
No, I did. I thought you were going to talk about the new IFT, but let's talk
about the new IFT. So, I mean, that's the story. If you have a Pixel or soon a Google Home, you can use If This Then That. The examples they give are, okay, Google, party time, which I guess gives you your Hue Lights a party cast. You could post to Facebook by voice. See, that's what I can do from my...
I think that's actually really cool.
On my Google Throne.
Oh, Lord.
Block the next hour in Google Calendar. But you know what you can't do, which is frustrating, is make a calendar entry. Or can you? Can you do that? Wasn't that one of the issues with Assistant? You couldn't just make it a calendar appointment? Or maybe you can. I don't know yet.
I don't have a Pixel, nor do I have a Home yet.
I know. That's why you have to get one or the other. You're getting a Home, though.
I am getting a Home.
Yeah.
It's on the way. So If This and That actually changed today. They took all of their recipes down. They're no longer recipes. They're now applets.
Oh.
They're controlled by the people who, they call them the service providers. So the people who make the apps.
Oh, this applets. Is what the Pinboard guy was getting upset about.
Yes. The pin, again, like recently, or was that his old stuff?
Remember? They wanted him to, there was a new If This Then That API, and they wanted him to not only create it, but to be responsible for it.
Yes.
And I guess this is what's happening now.
This is the new If This and That. So all of your old recipes, so if you're like me and you had a bunch of recipes, they're all now applets, and they still exist.
Okay.
You're going, right now, only service providers can create applets. So no more can I give you a recipe of the day that you create.
Oh.
Sadness.
Oh.
So now only people who control the channel get to do it. Eventually they're going to open
it up. So it's going to be plug and play. You know what? They probably decided people don't want to go to the effort of making a whole recipe.
A lot of people didn't. I mean, to be totally honest, you know, making a recipe requires you to know
in
advance.
It's a lot of
work. Yeah.
I use Zapier, and they still let you do it the way If This Then That did. And I would I think they have a free level, but it's more complicated. You see, you have to do all of this, you know, stuff.
But all this If Then That-ing.
Yeah, but it's great. And I use it all the time. But I bet it doesn't have the home automation stuff.
So on the home automation side, and actually Microsoft just announced Flows. I haven't played with that. Flow. I haven't seen that yet, but... On the home automation side, for iOS users, there's an app called Stringify that you can use. It doesn't have all of the things that If This Then That had, though. So it's pretty limited.
So what's going to happen to my recipes? I'm logging in.
They have now turned into applets.
But they're not changed or turned off.
They're not changed. They're fine.
But I can't make a new recipe by hand?
No, but they're going to open up a maker tier eventually. So if you want to be on the maker tier, I don't know how that happens. Maybe if you have a lot of recipes that you've made, then eventually you will have that power again.
Well,
you can browse. I mean, there's lots of lovely recipes. I'm bringing a recipe to y'all.
So. I bet you what they found out was that's what people do.
Yeah.
Right. Is that they just click on other people's recipes. So they have a bunch of collections, applets we love, 15 applets for outer space. I used to have an applet that would tell me whenever the International Space Station went overhead. But the problem is It does that 20 times a day.
It does. We had one on our GigaOhm Slack. This is very GigaOhm, that told us it was a random bot that would be like, someone has launched into space. So anytime sent an astronaut into space, they would,
See, what we really need, and I bet you there's somewhere a geeky thing that can do this, is something a little more sophisticated. For instance, I would have loved to have the ISS script say, well, is it after dark? Well, then tell me the ISS is overhead. Things like that. But
so you wanted Yahoo Pipes.
Yes. Remember that? The late lamented Yahoo
good
Pipes.
Thing Yahoo'd killed.
What? Maybe these things are just too hard for normal people to use.
They are. Someone actually, I was telling like a normal person about if this and that, and they looked at me. They were like, so you want me to go on my computer and do what?
Well, they have an app. What? They have a fairly easy app, but you're right. This is why I hate normies.
This is why.
This is why we can't have nice things. Normies.
I was going to say, this is why there's probably a ceiling on my show, your show.
Yeah. Oh, well, we know there's a ceiling. We reached it. There's about 250,000 people who will listen to this kind of programming. And maybe that number will go up over time. It does kind of every year, 5 or 10% increase. But we have a total unique audience of somewhere over 5 million. And I figure that's probably everybody.
That's all the geeks you can find.
That's everybody. There's a lot more.
Scrape the bottom of the geek barrel.
I gave a presentation to Tech TV when they were really kind of going downhill and going more mainstream, saying, you know, there's, what was it? I can't remember now. There's 41 million programmers in the United States. If you made a channel that they loved, you wouldn't have to worry. But they didn't. I guess, you know, it's too fragmented a crowd or whatever. I don't know.
Too opinionated.
Well, actually, that was their response, come to think of it.
Really?
Yeah. But Leo, the problem is those people are too smart. They don't buy brands. Brands need ignorant people. And so advertisers don't want smart people because they don't, you know, you're too smart to just buy Tide for the rest of your life. You actually might investigate what works best. They were very afraid. This was 2001 or 2002. They were very afraid of the internet-enabled consumer, as they should have been. But instead of saying, oh, we don't want those people, what they should have done is say, oh, well, maybe we'll make a better product that the internet-aware consumer will like. Instead, they said, no, we just want dumb people. This was the phrase. I'll never forget it. Joe Gillespie, credit to you, my friend. Brand is the refuge of the ignorant.
Wow. How do all the Apple fanboys feel about that?
That's what actually was my retort to him is, well, why do people buy Apple? Maybe nowadays that retort wouldn't be as effective as it was then. My applets. Yeah, boy, they kind of took all the fun out of it. I can't even see what they do. They're just tiles now.
Oh, just click on one. Click on the Echo. Click on automatic.
They're a sponsor of this fine
They're
show.
A sponsor of the show.
Yeah. Automatic. My applets. Oh, I see. So that was organized by provider. Post trip info to Evernote. And then here's some more. But I can't just create one anymore.
Yeah. If you wanted to connect your automatic to something that no one has ever thought was reasonable. Yeah.
Terrible. I don't like it. Zapier. We use it here, right? Carson's screaming in pain. We use it here all the time.
Why is Carson screaming in pain?
Because we use it all the time for all sorts of things. For instance, when I wonder if that's going to break my pinboard recipe. I think I used Zapier. I don't know. I think I did. So you're safe. So one of the things that we do for this show and all the shows that Carson produces that I host is I use Pinboard as a bookmarking tool. So whenever I'm surfing the web, if I see something I want, I click my PB button and it will automatically open up a little Pinboard window, which I can then put some tags into, usually twig, the week number. This is week 578 and all that. And then what it was doing, it was just going to Pinboard, which was a Delicious clone that came along when Yahoo destroyed Delicious. But Karsten said, boy, it'd be a lot easier if you took your Pinboard feed and put it in a Google sheet for me. And he sent me a template for what he wanted, and it was very easy to do. But I did it with Zapier, Karsten, I think. So it won't impact.
So is that how you put things on the rundown?
Yeah, so it's easier for, he still builds the rundown, but now he can do it from a Google Sheet to a Google Sheet. So he just copies the line, and I put the line in the format he used and paste it in. So it's much easier for him. And I don't know, you know, we've been doing this workflow for 10 years.
Yeah.
Carson's the first guy who said, you know, if you just put it in a sheet, it would be a lot easier for me. So anything I paste, anything I bookmark on Pinboard now goes to a Google sheet on Google. In fact, I can show you probably.
Do you also label it per show? As you,
yeah, it's that's what the tags are for. So it's got Leo's it. Links. So this will give you this is what it looks like. It's the date I pinned it, the headline, the actual link, and then the various tag numbers on it. And he uses the tags. You probably don't use it all that much, but when it's tagged Twig, that means that this would be something that'd be good for Twig. And you can see I've been doing it. I should start a September tab. I mean, an October tab.
It's November.
You don't really care. Yeah. I had a September tab and I was going to break it up because they're going to get longer and longer. Do you delete them as you go? I delete them off the rundown. Okay. So. But see, this is automated from Zapier.
Hmm.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know where we're going to use this article, but I think I'm going to use it right now. I bookmarked it and I think we should, unknown danger of surgical lasers. Everybody.
During surgery after the patient farted in the middle of the operation. While the doctors operated on the woman's cervix, she apparently passed gas and then ended up being burned after the laser ignited the fart, resulting in a fiery explosion. A committee of
this is not a joke.
I cannot believe that's not a joke.
Oh, yes, it's a joke.
This happened. No. At the Tokyo Medical University Hospital, the patient's intestinal gas leaked into the space of the operation, ignited with the irradiation of the laser. The burning spread, eventually reaching the surgical drape and causing a fire. There you have it, folks. Patient burned.
I feel like they must have been doing like ablations and stuff inside people's like abdominal cavities. And that's
what you're saying is it's shocking this hasn't happened sooner.
Well, I feel like people would like, we should know about this. This
I smell Snopes.
Yeah,
it does come from the New York Daily News. How trustworthy is the New York Daily News? What do you think, Jeff?
It's GQ Magazine and Gizmodo, Metal Floss. Who else running this?
Well, Snopes. Everybody's probably...
Okay, Snopes. Let's see Snopes.
All right. What does Snopes say?
2 days ago, Snopes says... No, scroll down, Snopes. Come on. Now it's hanging up on me.
Experts charged with investigating the incident ruled that there were no other flammable materials present at the time of surgery, and the equipment that was used did not malfunction, leading them to believe the woman's flatulence was the culprit.
God, this poor woman.
This is what makes Howard Stern so successful, because farts are just
you can't help funny. But laugh. Well, it's this is a new segment on the show when technology strikes. What does Snopes say?
I just crashed. I just crashed. Can you look it up? Look up fart laser fire, and you'll see Snopes down about five. And I just crashed my Chromebook. What is it? What do they say?
Reported it. They didn't. Yeah, look, it's from the Asahi Shimbun. This is from the Asahi Shimbun, which is a very. I mean, this is the New York Times of Japan. If Snopes is repeating the rumor,
yes, Snopes is repeating it.
I think that. I mean, that's not. Let's get PolitiFact on it. Wow. Wow. This show has really taken a turn for the.
This is really yes.
The childish. Let's find something.
As fiery farts gone into the list of show titles yet, or what's how did you interpret this, Karsten, in your artistic main?
Well, we won't know till the end of the show, will we? Because there are other good candidates.
Crappy crap, is that there?
I think Google Throne is my front runner right now. They're all, it's interesting, all scatological, aren't they? Do we have Alphabet quarterly results? We do. Third quarter results for Alphabet, which is the Google parent corporation. We had, says Ruth Porat, a great third quarter. Is that really scientifically accurate language? A great third quarter. 20% revenue growth year on year, 23% on a constant currency basis. They have to do that. This is what happens when you're a big global company, that your profits are influenced by the ebb and flow of the dollar against other currencies. Mobile search and video powering our core advertising business, and we're excited about the progress of newer businesses in Google and other bets. Let's look at other bets. So, 20% increase in revenue year over year. Operating income gap, $5.76 billion. Operating margin gap, 26%. We won't talk about non-GAAP because we believe in generally accepted accounting practices.
Hear, hear.
Although non-GAAP is $7.6 billion in revenue, I mean in income. Operating. What's the difference between operating income and net income, Ms. Financial Analyst?
Net income is lower down after you take out other stuff in the
it's
question.
Not much lower down, but it's kind of profit, but not exactly.
Net income is profit. It's the most
as opposed
profit.
To operating income.
Operating is that just? I think operating is just minus your cost of goods. Like it's.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't take into account EBITDA.
EBITDA, things like employee compensation and stuff like that.
Amortization, stock. Depreciation, assets.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know about stock.
Hey, $5 billion in profit, nothing to sneeze at for 3 months.
I'd take it.
I'd take it. Now, let's see. Here's the other bets. $197 million in revenue for an operating loss of, $865 million.
That's less. It used to be 900 and something.
980. It was 980 last year. For this and quarter last year. But that's a lot. To lose almost $1 billion a quarter, those are bets. Wait. That's big bets.
But wait. YouTube. Did you see the YouTube numbers? And they're not real. There's an analyst who was saying that YouTube was making $10 billion for Google. Yeah.
See, they don't break. Google doesn't break that out.
It does not. But maybe it should. That feels pretty material.
So as somebody whose effective tax rate edges personally close to 50%, because I'm in a high tax state. Google's effective tax rate is, remember mine 50, like half. Google's effective tax rate, 16% this year. And if I could do the Irish runaround and the Dutch sandwich, you better believe it. I would be doing that now. So there you go. 16%, hey, it's better than nothing. And they make so much money that's, you know, they pay a lot more in taxes.
Every percent counts.
Every percent counts. It's getting better. They lose money. The big bets lose money, but it's getting better. Oh, I loved this story. But that's because I'm an old hippie. And this might be another one for Snopes, because I got this message saying we should all check in to the Standing Rock Indian Reservation because someone had heard that the law enforcement, this is where, of course, the sit-in is going on in a protest of the North Dakota oil pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline. Somebody said that the law enforcement agents were checking Facebook check-ins to see who was in the sit-in.
So Ars Technica wrote, there is no way your Facebook check-in is confusing North Dakota cops.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That was my reaction as well. However, 1.5 million people checked in on Facebook in Standing Rock, North Dakota.
Okay, it's not hard to express solidarity with something that you think is not great with a click.
Yeah, I don't got to go anywhere. I don't got to sit. I can eat. I don't have to worry. Nobody's going to arrest me.
That's the low point in participatory democracy right there.
There are roughly 140 protesters, but there are 1.5 million check-ins. Yeah, it is kind of that. You weren't here last week where we showed how that simple register to vote announcement on Facebook created massive spikes in voter registration, like in an order of 4, 5, 6 times higher voter registration. This is kind of all about an ongoing segment on this show Wow, Facebook is big.
Do you? And you know what?
What?
Well, I was so. This is so frustrating to me because one, people will feel like they're being activists with their clicks.
Yeah, and they aren't really doing anything. Yeah.
Well, not just that, but Facebook controls what people see, not just with algorithms, but their ability to censor their platform because it's their platform. I'm not arguing with their ability to do so, but we can't feel like, what if Facebook suddenly decides it really supports this particular pipeline, which I doubt, but it's just, we're not doing anything and we're feeling like we're putting all our agency in something that ultimately doesn't deserve it. Sorry.
Yeah.
Stacey cranky.
But it's like a vote. It's like a way of standing up. I mean, I understand, and you should also donate and spend time and participate physically. Look at Jeff. He went and canvassed in Pennsylvania. I mean,
yep.
That there's nothing, there's no substitute for that. But there's also room, if you're doing that, to also show how you feel about something, to take a stand, to change your, you know, Facebook or your Twitter avatar to, you know, a logo or a country's flag. I'm not against that unless it's the only thing you do. And then you go, see, I do care.
It's less that it's not actually that. It's more that Facebook or Twitter or anyone can decide to stop showing that at any point in time
But they don't.
They have in other cases. Think about like breastfeeding moms getting.
Right. I mean, they got a lot of heat and they changed that.
Finally.
I think they're smart enough now to understand that they should be careful about that kind of thing. I know they're still doing it. They took down the famous Vietnam girl napalm picture.
Yes, they did. And then
they changed their policy.
But again, but that's Facebook, isn't it? They do it, then apologize later. But I think they also understand, and they're increasingly understanding, that any small thing they do has a huge impact. And so they've got to be very, very, very careful.
It's kind of like seeing the erosion of white privilege in real time. If you think about like the decisions they make and you're like, oh, boom. Or not white privilege, male privilege, just privilege.
Privilege.
Because
they could be, but privilege. Privilege is privilege. Vine shutting down. Twitter's cutting 9% of its workforce. Some of that will be the people who do Vine. I love this Mike article. We talked about it on Sunday. Inside the meeting that changed the fate of Vine forever. Apparently 20 of the top creators of Vine gathered, according to Mike, M-I-C, the Mike Network. Was it last year, the year before, saying, we're losing viewers, Vine. You're not making the changes the platform you need to make. So here's the deal. If you pay us $1.2 million each, make some product changes, open up a more direct line of communication to us, we agree to give you 12 pieces of monthly content or 3 Vines per week for a year. And Vine said no. And see, they were right because Vine's gone. Proved them right. Here's Vine's biggest star. Have you ever heard of King Bach?
No.
Me neither.
No, but I like his suit, Tux.
He's a good-looking guy. Apparently
so does
very
all
funny.
Their stuff disappear?
Well, eventually they can copy it off.
Yeah, no place to put it.
The creator of Vine, who sold it to Twitter for, I think, $30 million, tweeted, simple tweet, 4 words, don't sell your company. Is he going to give the money back? I don't think so.
Can he buy it back for a dollar?
Maybe. They've actually created a new app. I actually tried it out before the show. That's why I was retying my bow tie. It's called Hype. Just came out today on iOS. As far as I can tell, it's Periscope or Meerkat. It's a live streaming platform. I guess maybe they're hoping that the Vine stars will come back. But this is so different from what Vine was. Vine was heavily edited 6-second videos. This is live streaming. Very disappointed to see that my bow tying did not get into the popular today section. Vine is a little more, Hype is a little more different than Periscope because you see your circle and these sparkles are like thumbs up or hearts. And you can see, I don't know what those images are. You can put images in video. You can actually produce it a little bit more. And then there's comments. This is a Vine replay. I don't know how to get out of it because because iOS has no controls. Wow, look at all these people. Tony Tommy Hawk, Howie Easy, Courtney Courier. They all got more hits than I did. And I guess nobody wanted to know how to tie a bow tie. Oh, there's Callie Lewis. She's using Hype. H-Y-P-E. It's kind of Snapchat-y, right? I mean,
it does feel Snapchat-y.
Yeah. It's Snapchat meets Periscope, maybe. So.
What is happening here?
Maybe there's audio. She's got a lot of people watching. I don't know.
Your first problem.
Yeah, she's talking and showing pop. Close up of popcorn. There you go.
So,
she's learning how to use it is what it is. So that's as with a lot of us, this is, you know, we're just using it for the first time. It's iOS only, no Android.
Well,
remember Vine? It took a long time to get Vine on Android. It wasn't on Android.
Yeah, it did. That's right.
Yeah.
Once again, early adopters.
Yeah. Family is suing Amazon because their hoverboard destroyed their entire house. Oh, this is bad. The hoverboard was sold. That's a bad fire. Hoverboard was sold on Amazon, not by Amazon, but the owners in Nashville contend that Amazon and its various subsidiaries had information about the dangerousness of the product well in advance of the January 9th fire.
If Amazon is liable for everything that it's sold in its marketplace.
Yeah. No one was hurt, although it sounds like it was close. Six members of the family. The father rescued two of his children from the second floor of the burning home.
Dear God.
Yeah, no kidding. The lawsuit says the seller of the hoverboard listed online, W Deals, is a sham organization registered to an apartment in New York City. They haven't responded to the lawsuit. So the suit alleges a family who sold a counterfeit product from China, not a brand with a Samsung lithium ion battery as listed on Amazon. Although these days that wouldn't necessarily be any assurance of safety. Go ahead.
It sounds like they're suing Amazon because they can't sue anybody else.
Precisely. There are actually 10 mm-hmm. defendants, including Amazon and retailers. But, you know, you sue whoever has the deep pockets. Tennessee product liability law holds a seller responsible if the manufacturer can't be found. And they have not been able to get the manufacturer. As with, I would guess, many hoverboards, you know.
Yeah.
And, by the way, this underscores something that Amazon does. I don't know if people know this. You do if you spend enough time on Amazon. So we order everything on Amazon. And if you're not, like, paying attention, like, we ordered some lemon pledge, and we got, like a hand-wrapped box of loose lemon pledge bottles in the mail from Las Vegas. It wasn't because, even though it was on Amazon, there's all sorts of levels. There's lots of people who use Amazon for fulfillment, lots of people who use Amazon to sell but fulfill it themselves. When you're buying on Amazon, you could be buying from a lot of different places that you don't even know about. And Amazon themselves do some very odd things. I have a good friend who sells a product on Amazon. It's a water ionizer. He has them made in China, puts his company's in during the manufacturing process, company name on it, the name, whatever brand name they made up. He buys advertisements for it, and it's on Amazon, for sale on Amazon. But Amazon's algorithmic. So all of a sudden his sales, like in one day, went to nothing. And he looked on Amazon, did a search for his company's name and the product, and Amazon was selling it. His product with his brand name on it, less than he was selling it for. They had determined algorithmically they could, and it just happened. So he played a game with him. He lowered his price, and then the Amazon price went through the roof because they figured, well, I can't match this price. We'll just see if we can get somebody and sell it to it for a lot. And this is all done, I'm sure, not by a human, but completely algorithmically. So Amazon is a very, often you're not buying from Amazon. Sometimes you're not even fulfilled by Amazon. It's completely a third party. Often I think, and I have some evidence for this, because we've bought some expensive stuff. It's just some guy who's reselling using Amazon as a conduit. He never has the merchandise. He just routes it through, right? And I think that's what happened with his hoverboard. It was just an apartment. He never had any merchandise to sell. So think you got to be careful. And this gets down to buying batteries and Apple reported
cables.
Apple reported like 90% of all the lightning cables sold on Amazon were fraudulent, were fake, were bad cables, even though they had the made for iPhone logo on it. And they're suing because they're probably suing Amazon as well as whoever's doing this, because Amazon doesn't do any oversight at all. You can make anything you want as a list. It's like buying on eBay, even though you don't.
Well,
get
is
that
it a
feeling.
Seller marketplace? Yeah.
So the key is buy stuff that's sold by Amazon, fulfilled by Amazon.
Fulfilled, right?
But I think a lot of people get burnt by that. Some, as you can see, literally.
So I have to ask, because hoverboards were last year's hot Christmas gift.
Yeah.
What is, I don't feel like we've seen something, or did I miss it?
Oh, yeah. We saw a few things. Everything,
what are they?
Everything goes through here. What is that robot that Megan had? Do you, anybody remember? It was a Cosmo or Osmo?
The Omate?
Maybe the Omate.
The one that talks to the Echo?
Maybe that was it. It plays games. It was designed by some folks who used to work at Pixar. So it has a lot. Yeah, maybe it is the Omate.
Oh, no. Are you talking about the Toy Talk stuff?
No. Toy Talk's very cool, too. I like that. We've interviewed those guys.
Let's see if these guys work.
Yeah, is this the Omate? No, this isn't it, although this is kind of cool, too. It was Cosmo?
Cosmo, Anki's robot. Anki's
it's Monkey.
Cosmo
that's
robot.
Right.
Yeah.
Now this, I don't know, you know, if this will be the toy of the holiday, but we played with it. It was really super cool. The only negative is it's kind of pricey. It's like $150, $160.
That's kind of like the little BB-8. Wasn't BB-8
one? BB-8 was very expensive. That was the toy last year, right? This thing, look at its face. It has a lot of character. It makes sounds and stuff. If it really, you feel like it's kind of looking at you and it recognizes you. It has a camera on it. And
gosh, how fun.
Yeah.
Sorry.
See?
Oh, that is neat.
$179.99. How neat. Now how much would you pay? But Anki did that great racetrack, which I have because I gave it to my son for Christmas and he never wanted it. So maybe
you can buy my daughter stuff for Christmas.
Yeah, maybe I'll send you my Anki racetrack. That's actually pretty cool. So this is like BB-8, only a little bit smarter.
I like to have a girl to play with technology.
Yeah, exactly. And it has one additional feature, which I like. It has an SDK, and you can write software for it in Python. So that's kind of interesting, right? So it starts as just kind of a plug-and-play consumer thing. But it can get a little bit more sophisticated. So there's my vote for at least one of the hot toys of the year.
All right.
It's too expensive, though, to really be a huge one, right?
Well, a hoverboard was expensive. I'm just thinking hot tech kind of thing.
That's the hot tech right there. Robots.
Right there, the Cosmo robots.
Right. Or a Tesla glass roof.
Oh. So have you ordered yours already, Leo?
You can't order it, can you? If I could. We already have SolarCity panels. I'm a little disappointed.
Oh, see, this is what happens when you're an early adopter.
Oh, and also, my Tesla's also obsolete because 2 weeks ago or last week, Elon announced that all the new Teslas have 18 cameras and two hickeys and they'll be self-driving. And mine doesn't have any of that stuff.
What do you think about him decreeing that you can't make money with his self-driving car?
Oh, that's Elon in a nutshell.
But it's really a troubling.
It is the
notion.
End of the ownership. Concept. But we've already been there. I mean, remember when Amazon and the Kindle and blah, blah, blah.
I know, same thing.
But
Jesus, you spend a fortune and you can't use it as you wish to do what you wish in life.
There are still other alternatives.
So this is, let me just show you the new Model S, because of course you have to pay for the enhanced autopilot, which is going to add a little bit. $6,000 extra.
$6,000.
Oh, and did you want full self-driving capability? Well, check that box. That adds $4,000. Okay, so What does self-driving, doubles the numbers of active cameras from 4 to 8, enable full self-driving? I only have, I think, one camera on mine. You only have one on yours as well, I should say, Stacy. Please note, self-driving functionality is dependent upon extensive software validation and regulatory approval, which may vary widely by jurisdiction. In other words, you may never get it. It's not possible to know exactly when each element of the functionality described above will be available, as this is highly dependent on local regulatory approval. So this is very typical of Elon, which is, you know, he's selling the sci-fi. He's selling the dream, not the reality. But here's the part you're talking about, Jeff. Please note, also, that using a self-driving Tesla for car sharing and ride hailing for friends and family is fine, but doing so for revenue purposes will only be permissible on the Tesla network, details of which will be released next
year. So that's restraint of trade. It's something wrong.
Is it illegal, though? Probably not. You can say when you sell something, America, it can only be used this way.
Oh, wait, no, there was just a legal decision that I think affects this.
Yes, the headline was, you can now hack your car. Oh, yeah, that's the Librarian of Congress. Okay, so that's an interesting case, which as of the 1st of November, and this is a 2-year trial, you can hack your car or your device. And this all comes from the DMCA, which makes it illegal to reverse engineer protected software, which allows things like John Deere to say, you can't maintain your own tractor because we don't want anybody to steal the code in our tractors. And so the Copyright Office, which rules on these kinds of things, the Library of Congress runs the Copyright Office, last year, a full year ago, said, we're going to allow for the digital repair of vehicles. We're going to allow for circumventing protections on copyrighted systems for consumer devices next year. And it just went into effect for a 2-year period. The security exemption for researchers only applies to good faith testing in a controlled environment designed to avoid any harm to individuals or the public. We're not talking about testing your neighbor's pacemaker while it's implanted. We're talking about a controlled lab and a device owned by a researcher. But for researchers, this is huge. Remember Ed Felton, going back to voting, Princeton professor, who was able to show that the Diebold voting machines were eminently hackable. Diebold sued him, saying that's a violation of our copyright. You can't do this kind of research. So this is very important and very good news, and I hope that it gets extended. Sony sued George Hotz, remember, for hacking a Sony PlayStation.
So that gives you the right to modify. Does that not mean you have the right to use as you wish? To modify the use?
I don't think this applies to this. I think... No.
I just find it offensive.
You know, when you buy a computer, you can't use it to make... it. You know, most of the terms of agreement say you can't use it to make nuclear weapons.
Well, that's not making a living.
No, but I'm just saying this is a long-standing...
But really. Try to come up with an analogy. License. So you buy a pair of scissors and you're told you can only use this to cut your kids' costumes. You can't use this to start a tailor business. Give me any analogy where you will buy something and you are told you cannot use it to your own end.
Well, you can't use your Apple computer to make nuclear weapons.
Well,
okay, but that's a security issue as opposed to a
yes, you can use
that's
these
not anti-competitive.
Can use these scissors to cut clothes, but only if you sell them through Amazon, only if you buy the fabric from me.
I don't know, it's a good question. I am not a lawyer. But I bet you on Friday, Denise Howell and her team of crack lawyers will dissect
this. That's what I would love
to
hear. That's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, This Week in Law. Denise, if you haven't already talked about it, that'd be a good one for this week. Official now, Oracle is going to appeal its loss against Google. I guess it's going to the Supreme Court.
Does that mean we have to talk about Oracle and Google?
Actually, it goes to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. So it goes up to the Circuit Court. And then after that would be the Supreme Court.
Oh, that's right, because it got tossed back from one appellate court for something else. And then,
And unfortunately, the Federal Circuit is very patent holder friendly. It's not it's not the one you really want. This is the can APIs be copyrighted whole thing. Actually, I think that's already been decided. APIs that can be copyrighted. That's the Federal Circuit decided that. And then now they have to decide what is it, whether the is the award appropriate? I can't remember what it is there. It's so confusing what they're going to. I think it's over the year.
This is where Jeff and I are just like, yeah, Leo, you just read all
I don't
it.
Usually like to do court stuff, to be honest. But this says Google in the title, so.
It does. we appreciate you bearing that burden for
us. This is the fair use. That's right. This is the fair use test. So now. Now, so the jury found that it was fair, that Google's use of the APIs was fair use. Not that the APIs weren't copyrighted, but it was fair use to use them. And now they're going to see, the circuit court is going to be asked whether that is in fact fair use, which is okay. That's good. We need more fair use cases, frankly. We use fair use as a defense all the time.
Mm-hmm.
POTUS, at POTUS on Twitter, is not going to stay, as I think everybody knew, with President Obama, the new president. We'll get at POTUS. We'll also get the Facebook, the YouTube, the Snapchat, the Instagram, the Flickr, the Vimeo, the iTunes, and even the MySpace accounts.
I bet it also had a Vine.
I bet there was a Vine. Once there was a Vine. 8 years of digital first, 470,000 We the People petitions, 30,000 at White House tweets, thousands of video footage. And the president, this is great, has made it clear that a smooth transition between administrations and their social media accounts is key. No, I added the social media accounts part. Actually, what's interesting, all the tweets.
Imagine that account in a certain person's hands.
I can't wait. By the way, imagine all of the president's stuff. He's really the first social media president, right?
Yes.
Yes.
All of the president's stuff will go in the National Archives and Records Administration, from tweets to snaps.
Our tweets, weren't they already all in the Library of Congress?
Yes. The Twitter gave them a hard drive.
All the tweets are on here, really.
And the handle at POTUS will be made available to the 45th president on January 20th as he is sworn in. The president will say, oh, here's the password. He'll give me a little piece of paper. Here's the password. 11 million followers, but...
Here's the button and the password, yeah.
Followers stay. The tweets disappear. The previous tweets are gone.
Well, but put elsewhere. Aren't they put on another account for archival purposes?
POTUS 44.
Yeah.
Makes sense. At POTUS 44 will continue to contain all of President Obama's
tweets. I
assume
they got a little help from Twitter on that.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty
and
good.
And, of course, at NARA.
What about Michelle Obama?
Facebook accounts for the president, vice president, and the Instagram accounts belonging to the first lady and vice president will be moved to the new 44 usernames as well and preserved by NARA.
FLOTUS might become, what would that be? First husband?
Oh, well, we've had
POTUS?
No. Actually, I don't think there's an Otis for that. But he will be called the first gentleman, I believe. There's a whole protocol thing they're trying to figure that out. If Secretary Clinton is elected, she, of course, as the president, will have a male first lady. He'll be the first gentleman. The complication is the first gentleman is also a former president.
He's Mr. President,
except when in the presence of Madam President. So at that point, I don't know what they call him. Mr. Clinton, I guess.
Bubba.
Because she's Madam President. You can't call him, I'm told,
right,
by my wife, who's a protocol whiz. But apparently this is a whole thing. The protocol experts, there's no president.
Fascinating.
These are not the protocols I know.
So he'd be Fagotus.
Fagotus.
Abe Fagotus. The first gentleman.
By the way, can you name a certain famous media mogul who hasn't been on Twitter in months that I don't think people have noticed? Since March.
Rupert Murdoch?
Yes.
Is he still alive?
He was the talk of all Twitter. Oh. And then apparently his new wife must have taken his phone away or smart. Gave it to Donald Trump.
That is, he's married well. He married who? Jerry Hall.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's weird. That's Mick Jagger's ex.
But wait, his ex is now, is she still dating Putin?
Yes. Well, was.
Okay. Was. Well, that's the question.
And hanging out with Ivanka Trump. So finally, we've got the connections. Florida vet in our chat room says, Hillary is not going to get elected. Get real. So apparently I've been falling for these polls and all of that.
They're rigged.
They're rigged. And on that note, what are
is it time?
I'm going to do an ad, and then we're going to get your picks. How about that? Would you like to do that?
If it's not time, that's okay.
It is,
but you know,
time.
What?
It's definitely
I just put a roast chicken in the oven. I didn't. My husband
let's
did.
Wrap it up. Come on.
I was going to say, boy, you had your little robot do it, I guess, huh?
Hey.
IoT robot.
Better. A husband's the ultimate IoT device.
He's better.
Because he's connected via text. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. For all you digital natives, people who just say, why should we go back to the 19th century and bring in a stack of papers and practically sign them with a quill pen to get a home loan? Why can't we do this all online? Now you can. Thanks to Quicken Loans, one of the best loan providers in the world. They're awesome, and they've created a product just for you called Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage means you no longer have to search through stacks of old files and paperwork. You can do it all on your phone, on your tablet, on your laptop. And apply, answer a few questions. You can even submit pay stubs and bank statements with a push of a button, and boom, you get approved within minutes for a loan that's tailored to you because computers, they're very good at this. They have a little mini movie on the Rocket Mortgage site. It's quickenloans.com/twig. A young couple looking at a house, you know, like sometimes you do on a Sunday. Let's go look at some open houses. We're not in the market, but, and then they see something. They go, we got to get this, but we don't have a loan. Ah. She opens the phone. She fills out the, you know, answers the questions. Big buttons, very easy, all undone on the phone. You can see she's doing it right now. And then you're approved. She shows that to the realtor. Hey, I think we'll take this house. Push button, get mortgage, Rocket Mortgage, aptly named. Brings the mortgage process into the 21st century. It's fast, it's easy, it's completely online, and it's waiting for you at quickenloans.com/twig. Quicken Loans. .com/twig, whether it's a refi or a new home, you got to use it. Rocket Mortgage, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. We thank them, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, for their support. Don't forget the URL, quickenloans.com/twig. We wrap things up. We're going to let Stacy get to her chicken. But first, Stacy, you have to give us something.
I will. And I just was going to say that the smell of the chicken will start permeating the house. And I'll just be like, guys.
So do you roast it dry? Do you put tomatoes, potatoes, onions, lemons inside? What do you do?
I spatchcock it.
You are a spatchcocker.
I am.
I got to get the rules for that from you. I've always wanted to do that.
You got to rip out its spine and then squish it.
Is it hard?
That is it. No. You have to have... poultry scissors.
First time is hard because you go, I don't know what I'm doing. But
and then, you're like, I'm ripping out a chicken spine.
And then you go, and it's flat and it cooks much better because it's flat.
It does.
Do you brine it? Do you brine it?
I didn't. I did air chill it to let it dry out a little in the fridge. And nice. I just put butter, lemon, garlic, thyme, rosemary.
Mm-mm-mm. That's good eating. That's good eating.
I'm going to make a gravy and then some rice and roast some asparagus to go with it.
Hurry, I'm getting hungry now.
See? Okay. That is not my I gave you a recipe and here's another recipe.
Okay.
I lost it. Did it go away?
Oh no.
Okay. Hold on. Oh, crikey, y'all.
No.
It's an if this and that recipe.
By the way, you can only use poultry shears if you promise not to sell spatchcocks on the open market. This just in.
You guys really terrible.
You can only give it to family and friends. You may not sell it.
All right. Here's my...
You may not spatchcock any political fibers.
Oh, I can't... It won't let me... The new if this and that is not playing well with me.
You had a recipe just for us?
I did.
But you're not allowed to do those anymore.
Well, this is beforehand. So this is actually an applet that you can use. Let's see if I can publish it really fast. Oh, I don't know if you can publish it anymore.
You have to be a maker now, right?
Okay, let's see what this, what is this resolved to for you guys?
Just, there you go. Okay. How to spatchcock a chicken. No, that's not her pick.
That, here we go. Here I am coming to the chat room, not the chat room.
Oh, you're using our new technique? Our private chat?
I was going to, but it won't let me chat.
Computers Martha Stewart. Hard. I see it. MarthaStewart.com. No, no, that's spatchcock.
That's still spatchcocking.
It won't go away. No
okay,
more.
Here we go.
Okay.
There's my if this then that. My spatchcocking technique is borrowed from Kenji Lopez Alt, and The Food Lab is that cookbook.
That's so funny. Because I interviewed him. We just had him on the new Screensavers. He is wonderful.
He's so wonderful.
He's a great cook. That was a great episode. He was our guest on the new Screensavers. He's just over in Berkeley. You know, he works at Google. Oh, no, his wife works at Google. His wife works at Google. His wife is a Googler.
I did. I can see.
More spatchcocking. You know what? I can't load your if this than that. I think.
Okay.
I think they've. So how do you know that you're near? If you've wondered, how do you know you're near to the grocery store? How do you let your husband know that you're near to the grocery store and ask if you need something?
So if you have an iOS, you're going to have to use the iOS applets, but I use the Android one. So it's GPS on my Android or GPS on your iOS.
Okay.
You have the address.
You have a geofence. Oh, just do an address. Yes. Okay.
So it asks you for the address of your grocery store.
Yeah.
Or where it doesn't have to be a grocery store.
Wherever you shop. Yeah.
And then it asks you who you want to text, and then you create it. And there you go. I've been trying to get
That's
my husband
brilliant.
To load this. Yes, but he won't because he knows I'm going to be like, yes.
I'm near a grocery store. Do you need something, Stacy? About 24 things. I'm just about to send you a printout via fax.
I'm like, link to our Evernote. You can see.
That's what we use Google Keep for our grocery list because you can share a list.
Oh, right.
Very handy. Very
nice.
Handy.
We used to have a device that we could talk to and it would take
I had that device. That was terrible. Yeah. That device was horrible.
It was not the best device. It got better.
I can't remember the name of it, but I had that too. That was all that. You are a gadget hound if you had that thing. Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week.
Oh. I didn't like any of my numbers, so I'll just I put a lot of them in there.
By the way, so great fail whale on if this then that. Look at this. It wouldn't load for me. All the letters have fallen over.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Okay, your number of the week, my
so
friend.
Facebook on all these wonderful numbers we led before, huge amounts of revenue.
Yeah.
Stock down 8%. Why?
What?
They said, well, you know, we've kind of crammed every ad we can in there for a while. But two, aggressive spending ahead.
That seems an opportunity to me. If Facebook stock dropped because they had an incredible quarter, holy cow. It's because of as often the case, the advisement. You sell.
Yeah,
you,
but it's also the incredible spending. So you wonder, right. what they're signaling is they got big plans. They're doing more
good.
Big things.
I want them to spend.
Who knows what it'll be, but.
Internet. Oculus.
Yeah, it's VR. Centers. It could be internet.org. You know, if they're going to grow to that exact point, they need to get more people online.
Number of projects on the data center front.
Yeah, that too.
They've got to have more data centers. They've got to add more capacity there.
I don't feel like they ever are slow, but obviously it's keeping up with growth.
No, not, but like, yes, keeping up with growth. And especially if you start thinking about VR. Anyway.
My tip of the week is very simple. For years, we've told you need to get a password manager. It's really a key to security. And everybody says so, is having good, long, strong passwords. Problem is, the best passwords are the hardest to remember. So a password vault is great. You keep all your passwords in there. You let it generate new ones for you. You remember but one password, the password that unlocks your vault. The one we use and Steve Gibson's vetted, we've talked to Joe Segrist, the creator of on our shows and really believe in and recommend and even use business-wide, we use the enterprise version, is LastPass. Very good news today, LastPass has gone free for one of its key premium features. They still have a $1 a month premium subscription, which I'm going to continue. But in the past, if you wanted LastPass to work on your phone as well as your desktop, you had to pay. That is now part of the free LastPass. So there are really, for most people, the free LastPass is everything you need. It does everything you want, and it is a must-have. You get cross-platform access, which is now free. You can save passwords. It'll fill passwords in on Android. It does a beautiful job. Works on iOS somewhat. Generates passwords. Works in all browsers very nicely. Secure notes. You can share passwords in notes, which I do, with, of course, with my family, which is very handy. It supports two-factor. And then there's a few extra things, including family sharing and additional two-factor options if you pay the dollar a month. I pay the dollar a month just because I want to keep them around. And we also have the Enterprise Edition. Everybody in the company has access to that. And we've give free LastPass to everybody in the company. Because
do you have, does it offer, this is a, it's kind of a weird use case, but I have my passwords, but then I also have our thing passwords for like the apps that my husband wants to know too. Yeah. Is there a way to bifurcate that?
Yeah.
You and can, be like,
each of you should have an account and you can share the passwords that you both need.
Okay.
That's what we do. We have exactly that situation where Lisa doesn't need all my passwords, but she needs passwords to some of the critical stuff, like, you know, Internet of Things devices, stuff like that. So I just share those with her.
Okay.
And yes, that's built in. And that's part of the free service. The family sharing is for up to 5 users. So if you want to share to more than just your husband, but your daughter's too young to give any passwords to at this
point. Oh, I am not giving her any more control than what she has already. Good Lord.
She already can stomp her little feet and say, no, mommy, no. Stacey Higginbotham, StaceyOnIoT.com. She has a great podcast she does with Kevin Toefel at IoTPodcast.com and is a genius. And if you're going to the Structure Conference, you'll see what I mean next week in San Francisco, or that one in Half Moon Bay, whatever its name is.
Techonomy.
The day after the election.
Great to have you back. We know what Jeff Jarvis will be doing for the next 6 days. Worrying.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm planning to. I'm hoping on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday to go get out the vote.
Pennsylvania. Good. Get out the vote. Everybody should vote. If you're not voting, you can't complain. Okay, I have to amend that. If you don't vote, you can't complain unless you served in the armed forces, in which case you get to complain all you want.
Did you watch Louis C.K.'s endorsement on?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it was very funny.
Yeah, he's funny. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you next time. We do Twig every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. Now we are going to go into our winter time on Sunday in the United States. I know we do it after all of you. I'm sorry if you were late for the show today. But going forward, we're UTC minus 8. So this show will be 19:30 UTC. You'll have to do the calculations for whatever is right for your time zone. 19:30 UTC on Wednesdays. Join us in the chat room. If you can't, of course, we make on-demand versions of all of our shows available. Audio plus video if you want to see my snazzy bow tie. Always available at twit.tv/twig. Or youtube.com/thisweekingGoogle or whatever podcast client you use, you can find Twig. And don't miss an episode. It's always a great show. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.